everybody. Welcome to the April 2nd Economic Development Planning, Education, Employment, Arts, and Agriculture meeting. I would like to say welcome and also thank you to Cornell Cooperative Extension for hosting us this evening. And while we're here, Cornell, Melanie, the ED from Cornell, is going to give us a nice little presentation just to remind us what Cornell does and how we collaborate with Cornell. After the presentation, we'll go into our agenda items, and the first agenda items are candidate interviews for the IDA. So just to give you an idea of what's coming up, okay? So take it away, Melanie.
Very much. Welcome to our home. This is where the majority of our staff work from. And we have one office here. We have one office out on Route 28 for the Ashopan Watershed Stream Management Program. So we have two total of almost 30 staff here. I'm very happy to be welcoming you. I'm going to put on my timer to keep myself on, try not to go too much beyond our allotted time. So if there are two things that I want you to remember from our presentation, it's that we do education and we do research. So by definition, we are what is called a subordinate governmental agency, and we are old. We have been around for about 160-plus years in New York State as Cornell Cooperative Extension here in Ulster County. We've been here about 112 years. For this, we were in the Pearson House, for anyone who likes history, for many, many years. That was fully provided, and then we've been in a couple of other different locations. We've been at this location since 2011 or 12. So we are also part of a very large network. So we are part of 106 different colleges and universities that exist nationwide. They came in three waves. The first were sort of established in the northeast part of the country with one what they called land grant or cooperative extension institution per state. We then in 1890 integrated 19 historically black colleges and universities into our system. And in 1994, 38, I believe, tribal colleges and universities into our system. So we have a robust network that we can rely on for any of the resources that we are looking for. We also help to create a two-way street between Cornell and us. So this group of kids was from our Relatives and Parents program, 4-H, Vet Science program. I think we even threw in a couple board members' kids who were interested in going to Cornell. And we always organize a trip around the end of June to go onto campus and help them to see some of the amazing research that happens there. That's just one of many ways that we work with Cornell. We also have many internships with them. We're actually gearing up to do 3 to 4 internships this summer that might include figuring out how to better work with Spanish-speaking communities. We have master's-level applied math students who are doing measurements on stream hydrology that are helping us analyze that stuff. I do hit a certain time of night where my vocabulary declines, so hopefully we'll get to the next 10 minutes. We are almost there. And we also just do a number of research. Christian, who's our Ag Program Leader, and Melinda, who's our Healthy Communities Program Leader, are both in back. And they serve as PIs for small grain trials and other kinds of research trials. Meant to be a bilateral sort of trade. So one of the things I thought you all might be interested in hearing about is civic engagement. So this is at the Ulster County Legislature, where Legislator Sperry did a wonderful job of walking us through with a group of teens who were from four different school districts, Marlborough, Highland, Onteora, and Rondout. And they were interested in learning more about how do we talk about racism and what are we doing about racial and social justice in Ulster County. So Legislator Sperry did a really lovely job of walking us through some of the bills that have been introduced around that. And you can see we had a beaming crowd who got to learn a lot more about how the legislature works. Volunteerism is also something we do a whole lot of. This is a great picture from just a couple weeks ago. Also want to shout out who I have, Chair Criswell, who else was reading with us, Legislator Stewart. And we had more than 50 people reading, I think 4 or 5 legislators. Much appreciated, as well as members of the executive office as well. So we read to 1,500 kids in 80 different classrooms throughout Ulster County and almost all of our school districts in 1 week. So that's the sort of people power we are able to coordinate here at Cornell Cooperative Extension. How about our economic impact? So Ulster County appropriates dollars to us. For every $1 that Ulster County appropriates to us, we bring $14 back into the county. So that is the impact that we have in the most basic way that I can say it. We directly fund some posts within the government. We also have volunteer hours that we leverage. The true value is actually much, much higher than what's been reported here. Wanted to just mention regional farm to school programs, which are pictured here. That is local bison right here. And that is being used to increase the volume and variety of New York State foods within schools. So schools in Ulster that are actively doing that right now, are doing local procurement, are Kingston, Ellenville, Onteora, and Saugerties. There's a regional coordinator. Red Hook Schools was actually just able to get to 30, to over 30% of their food sourced locally. That has a major economic impact because what happens then is that whereas you only get reimbursed for 6 cents on each school meal, if you don't hit that threshold, you get reimbursed 25 cents on each school meal if you're using the 30% local variety. So we are working with many schools in Ulster County to try to help them to reach that goal. They also assisted with bringing over $42,000 to Ulster County schools for purchases of those local foods. So just an idea of our reach. So we reached almost 24,000 people directly last year. That doesn't include our indirect numbers are so outrageous that we usually don't report them because they're bigger than our county size from publications and other places. But this is direct reach, which is people who are subscribed to newsletters, attending programs, or otherwise directly benefited from our organization. So a large swath of them are from the ag program. These are sort of our four different program buckets. So there's 4-H youth development, healthy communities, the Shopping Watershed Stream Management Program, and agriculture. We work with 17 different county agencies and departments. So these were some of those who were the most relevant. So we know a lot of you. So just a few that we named here, Office of the Aging, Economic Development, Emergency Management, OET, Human Rights Commission, Mental Health, Planning, Public Works, Social Services, Tourism, and the Youth Bureau. Ag Research, this is a more extensive list than those of you who saw my last presentation. I figured this is the right committee for that, being agriculture and all. So Ag Research is one of the things that we do. We are currently doing research in all of these areas. And I will say, hopefully we'll have a little bit of time for questions where we have our program leads who can answer any specific questions you have around that. So small grains variety trials, small grains processing trials, insect trapping, WBC and soybean cyst nematodes. They're really trying to keep me on my toes with my vocab here. Cover crops, ag energy, livestock production, ag marketing for value-added production, and agritourism are some of the areas where we're doing research. We also have ag education. Our beginning farmer program was just completely full a couple of weeks ago. Had a number of wonderful people there. New landowners, livestock education, pasture management, field crops and agronomy, integrated pest management, environmental and climate smart farming, ag business and marketing, local food systems and supply chain, and meet the farmer, which I think a few of you were able to attend. I think perhaps maybe even donate or cook some stuff up. So that's always a great collaboration with tourism and beyond. We also have our Master Gardener volunteer program. So I was just talking about commercial ag. We also do consumer ag and those who are trying to make home gardens. So a number of different ways that we reach people. This is a time of year where if you walk in our office any Monday, Wednesday, or Friday, you will see a very busy Master Gardener hotline and questions being answered. And if you're really lucky, some really gross bugs walking in the door that we get to help identify other fun stuff. So they do training, outreach, and workshops. They do community and school projects. They do the hotline at this time of the year and demo gardens such as the SUNY Ulster and their state garden. And they person the Ulster County Fair. So they do all the judging for any of the entries that come in for the Ulster County Fair. We have our folks from the fair here, so they know they're doing good work to help our adults learn more about their plants as well. Talk for a minute about 4-H. So one that seems relevant to talk about with this group is we offer free public speaking training programs to youth 5 to 19 in Ulster County. I put in a plug. I've attended some legislative sessions in my day, and I said, you know, teaching people to get to their point in 2 minutes is a skill that people need to learn, right? So, and sometimes it's hard, and 2 minutes is particularly hard. So I said, what if we were to start training some of our older teens in a legislative talks category and start to get them able to express their point and what they want to communicate in a good, coherent way. So that's what I'd like to work on with this body. But we've had hundreds of youth go through this. Our kids win awards. They're amazing. If anyone was at last year, that was NSU presenting about macrophages and had done this amazing presentation where they've done all the drawings. We'd like to invite you all to the Ulster County Fair. Right before the Ulster County Fair's opening ceremonies, we'd like to walk you through and really help our 4-H kids show off the thousands of exhibits that they put in, both animal and in the youth building. This was one of the exhibits we did last year. I like to make a joke that people always try to figure out what's the craziest thing they're going to make us transport up to the Ulster County or to the State Fair, and it's like every year it gets bigger and wilder. So this is a like proper-sized eagle's nest that we then ended up bringing to the New York State Fair in Saugerty, or to New Syracuse, pardon me. And they learned all about birds and how to make that huge eagle replication. So we always have some fun exhibits in the fair. We'd love to see you and show them off. Just some days ago, this was happening outside our building. We were in contact with the fire chief, and there was a fire that was set on purpose, and we were training kids to put that fire out. We've all heard about strain on our emergency services. Right here in Ulster County, we're the first county to pilot a national program through extension that's called My Preparedness Initiative. Ulster County is the first one to try to pull it off. So we have 5 kids in our pilot program learning skills like CPR, how to run a fire extinguisher, and they are then charged with making 6 emergency preparedness kits for people in their community. So they're also giving back, they're learning, and they're giving back. Also do a number of inclusion and belonging programs here. So we have some great work being done in speaking and talking across different multiple racial and identity groups, and have piloted a program around that called Act for Change. There's a wonderful 7-minute video that, in this case, Professor Sperry helps us make through SUNY Ulster that I would encourage you to watch. It's seven amazing minutes where the kids talk about their experience, the teens talk about their experience in that program and what they learned. We're going to move on to healthy communities, and this is at for creating healthy places. They have a blender bike kickoff at Edson, so it's always great to get kids to both ingest natural sugar and then burn it off right at the same time. We would like doing that. So our healthy communities umbrella programs also, you might have seen this is the grand debut of the healthy communities program banner, so we're very happy to have it come in right in time for all of you. But explains a little bit more about some of the things we do through those programs. There are nutrition programs, there are parenting programs, and there are health and community development programs that we are running. They also bring over $500,000 into Ulster County every single year through a number of different grants and contracts. Climate Resilience Projects has done 37 different projects. Talked a little bit more extensively in the last group about that. And within that, since 2019, the Ulster County communities, 2 have been certified silver, 11 have been certified as bronze, and 5 are registered to try to get certified. That helps them to access other funding and more monies, and of course helps make them climate resilient, which we all have a vested interest in. Our SNAP-Ed federal nutrition programs are, this is a prescription on the right, it's Peters Market and Allenville Regional Health Network teamed up to provide nutrition education and vouchers. So the same way that somebody would write you a prescription, they write you a prescription for fresh fruit and vegetables and vouchers that will help to get you healthier. So that program has been running as part of our federal SNAP-Ed fruit and our SNAP-Ed program. Also, they've been working within Ellenville Regional School District, so they also work with the younger kids to try to instill really good practices for the young ones as well. Relative to this parents program, we've definitely seen an uptick in this group of people. The opioid epidemic has really done a job on grandparents now raising kids or others raising kids. So that program has expanded, is doing wonderful work, and what they do is they help to give the grandparents some respite, some needed rest. They help to do education and other programs with the kids. I said these are one of those fun programs where you never know what you're going to walk into. There were like two Easter bunnies at one of the last programs they were doing. So They do a great job of providing education, helping teach life skills, and also giving respite to the parents. The Ashokan Watershed Management Program is one of our kind of premier programs that is recognized as both a national model by the National Academy of Sciences, as well as a New York State model for flood analysis and mitigation. That program does a number of highly specialized education and technical assistance that guides towns and landowners who are handling streams and dealing with flooding issues. It is delivered locally with our closest siblings, Ulster County Soil and Water Conservation District. We just received another 5-year grant to be delivering those programs as part of watershed protection. We've been doing that program almost 20 years, since 2006. We are proud to share that we have the highest concentration of certified floodplain managers in New York State due to our educational programs. And we've trained over 25 local officials and highway department staff in the last year alone. Also, a number of infrastructure projects that have helped also improve our climate resilience, such as $7.4 million in stream implementation projects that has been distributed to municipalities in the New York City watershed since 2010. Other funding totaling over $12 million has been used to hire local contractors and professionals who are working within that watershed. I did want to share, as I'm wrapping up at 15:18, but I will wrap up quick. This is our county appropriation retrospective adjusted for inflation. So in 1992, we were receiving adjusted dollars. We would have been receiving just over $1 million from the county as our appropriation. In 2010, that amount was about a little less than half, I'm not going to do math right now. I'm going to read you the numbers. $644,180. In 2012, that amount went down to just a shade under $500,000. And in 2024, we are at $371,315,000. I say that mostly with thankfulness in my heart and voice for all of you, because that county appropriation helps us to leverage over 40 grants and contracts that help us to, for every dollar you give us, bring back $14 into the county. I do just want it people to be aware that we have done a really amazing job of diversifying our funding streams in a way that does not come back to the Ulster County taxpayer. And just say how important it is that we continue investing in Cornell Cooperative Extension, especially because our county dollars are tied to our state dollars. So if we get less county dollars, we're actually able to access less what are called state 224 dollars. And that is a formula whereby when we get more from the county, we get more from the state. Wanted to end with an invitation, not the cute puppy from the last one. See, I told you I was going to change a couple slides. So on Friday, November 1st, as much as I like talking about all the good work we do, I believe strongly in our programs, and I believe in our educators' ability to really woo you and help you to understand and connect all the people that you represent back to our programs. So we really want you to come and see our programs and what we're doing at the Cornell Cooperative Extension Showcase that we'll be doing on Friday, November 1st. At the Ashokan Center from about 2 until 7:30. More details to come, but please do mark your calendar. Please do connect us with your community residents, and we look forward to continuing to serve you here in Ulster County. Any questions for me or my team?
Which schools have reached the 30% local food?
So only 7% of schools in New York State have.
It's a couple of schools actually in Dutchess County and Columbia County that's in our region that we're working with. So I believe it's Redwood Pauling, and there's one other that is escaping me. But the ones that have reached 30% aren't in Ulster.
Okay.
However, the communities, Saugerties and Ellenville and Onteora just received small grants to bring New York State local foods into the schools, and our regional coordinator for regional farm to school is working with them and helped procure that funding so that they have money to spend on local food. So they're working towards it. We're starting in Ulster County. It's hard work.
Yeah, it's a tough goal.
Just a follow up on that is, from those programs that are doing it, is it going well? I mean, because we've heard about all these problems, you know, the cafeterias have to have a certain type of food, and they can't do all this crap and all this stuff. Is it working but still a lot of problems work out, or has it come in and actually is it, how's it going?
So I think each school has unique situations. The three schools that are really, like Red Hook has the same food service director for calling in for, I believe, Rhinebeck. So they're also working towards it. It really takes that food service director because you really do have to work, you know, diligently to bring in the local food to get food from them. But also our cooperative extension our Cornell, our regional farm to school coordinator, she actually sits down and goes through invoices, connects them to local farms, really helps and works with a team around the state to facilitate this so it works smoothly. Not saying there aren't bumps and things in the road, but where it's working well. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I attended a meeting here, a farm to school program. And what it really is going to take is a cultural change.
Yes.
Because these schools go out, they put out an RFP for, you know, certain things, whatever. The federal government will not allow them to stipulate it must come from New York State. So here we are giving an incentive in New York State for schools to have 30%, but they're not allowed to put into an RFP that they want New York State. And when you start looking at the volume of vegetables, apples, whatever that they're buying, it's very difficult for them. It's very difficult because they can't stipulate in their contract that it must come from New York State. So what we need to do is impress upon our lawmakers to get that changed. When that gets changed, you're going to see a lot of schools complying and getting that 26 cents.
Yep.
Instead of 6 cents,
yep.
24 cents, whatever it is,
yep.
The schools will be able to get that money from that state program, but they're because they're not allowed to stipulate it must come from New York State, they're hamstrung. And it's ridiculous. The agriculture community in this state, never mind, I'll stop there.
Legislator Nolan was next. Yeah, I think we're on the same topic, but changing that through legislation may be difficult because of the relationship of the federal government to the state.
Got to start somewhere.
Well, yes, I agree with you on the goal, but I'm going to suggest that maybe a quicker tactic would be to see if there is something like greenhouse gas costs that could be included in the RFP right away without any legislative change. Local farms would ace, and these big companies much further away would have a terrible greenhouse gas picture. So if we could include some metrics in those RFPs that the federal government would presumably bless, then we might be able to get something going quicker. But I'm happy to work with you on getting the legislation changed as well. It doesn't make any sense.
Just on that, it would have to be a carve-out. It's the same thing we talk about with, we're going to talk about possibly in the IDA in a little while. You're getting federal, the way the federal government looks at it is we're not going to give you money if you're only going to use it and you're going to block out all these other vendors from around the country. It's the same thing with the lottery with housing, which is why we're going to bring in, we're going to subsidize these housing, you know, and they're going to take state, federal funds, turns into a lottery. So we have to remember that when we're subsidizing the Penrose and all these other places because they're going to move a bunch of people in from all over the place. It's the same exact concept. The state is not going to give you state funds to build housing and then say, well, we're going to prioritize the people that live around there. It's not going to happen with these federal funds either. But that there's going to have to be another go-around. You're not going to have to use an RFP. But if you do, the feds are never going to allow you to do that, and for good reason, really.
Any other questions for Melanie or our Cornell friends?
Nope.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. It's bringing both edible and publications, too. So please do help yourself.
Okay. I apologize. I was so excited to see the Cornell presentation that I just jumped right in. So can we just do the pledge really quickly? Legislator, let's lead us in the pledge, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Thank you. Deputy Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Well, Chair Sperry.
I am here. Deputy Chair Litz.
Here.
Legislator Clinton.
Here.
Legislator Corcoran.
Here.
Legislator Hewitt.
Here.
Legislator Stewart.
Here.
Legislator Walz.
Here.
And Legislative Chair Cridwell.
Here.
You have 8 members present, no apps. Thank you. The first thing we need to do is approval for the March 5th regular and March 23rd special meeting minutes. Is there a discussion on either of those?
I'll make a motion to approve the March 5th and the March 23rd.
Great. Can I get a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, minutes are approved. So now we're going to move into, we have 2 candidate interviews to do this evening for the Ulster County Industrial Development Agency Board of Directors. Basically, they're taking place in this open meeting and will be recorded and live streamed. The time allotted for each candidate is about 15 to 20 minutes, depending on the conversation. Members of the committee have been given scoring sheets, the same scoring sheets that we used during our Saturday session of the interviews, which is also with the applications and resumes for the 2 candidates. The first candidate that we're going to be interviewing is Ryan Van Cleek, who was traveling on the 23rd and could not meet us in person that day. So, Mr. Van Cleek, are you ready for your interview?
Would you like me to stand?
Whatever you're comfortable with. Would you like to sit, move closer? Is there a seat open by you?
I'm a little nervous. I haven't really spoken in front of this many people before, so bear with me a little
bit. That's fine. So we just have a few standard questions, and the committee members will all take turns, just as we did on the Saturday that we did the interviews. They're pretty standard format questions, so we'll ask you, you respond, we'll go through them, and then at the end you can ask us follow-up questions, or it'll be a little bit more improvisational, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Do you want to sit at the table while you do it?
No, it's
not like to stand up here like everyone wants.
Okay. So what is your understanding of the role of an IDA board member?
Well, as far as I know, there's a little over 100 IDAs in New York State, and what they do is basically they give pilot agreements and tax incentives for businesses to come in. From my understanding, it's old and new businesses. In Ulster County, I really haven't seen any given to existing businesses, so I've seen most of it has been new businesses. They've been under a lot of heat for the results that have been seen, so that's kind of how I got involved. As I've been a taxpayer since 2008, and I read all the newspapers, and I'm looking to see if I can somehow make a difference for the taxpayers and the community to get better results. I'm a hands-on type of person, so I'm really interested in looking at the businesses that would like grants and tax incentives, and kind of see what they're all about. And I know they do fill out a form, but as far as how that goes within the IDA, I don't know if any other investigation is done or anything. So that's really what I'm interested in.
Great.
So that's basically what I know about that.
Question number 2. Have you spoken or communicated with the county executive or county executive staff on your desire to apply for a seat on the IDA?
No.
Follow up to that is, how did you find out about the openings for the IDA?
Is it in the paper a month ago in Daily Framing?
Okay. Newspaper. Thank you.
An article about how we're going to left.
Have you attended IDA meetings before?
I haven't. I saw a USITA a couple of CETA meetings the other day. So that might be something also that, you know, I should probably have done before I applied to be a member, but.
Thank you. If you're appointed, will you be accommodating your schedule to attend all regular subcommittee and public hearings?
Yeah, I've been a stay-at-home dad for the last 10 years. And so now my children are 10 and 12, so they don't really need me as much. So we have a lot of free time.
Thank you.
Can you provide a hypothetical example of a great IDA project and why you think it's a great example?
Great IDA project. Well, the last one I know is RBW, the lighting company in the town of Ulster. I know they're hiring a lot of people. They came up from Brooklyn. They seem really successful. Other than that, I really don't know any other ones.
What about an imaginary future one?
Imaginary future one?
Like a hypothetical one that, like what you think IDAs are for?
Well, I mean, I'm pro-business, you know, but I'd like to see results. Clawbacks. I don't want to do clawbacks, but before the grant is given or the tax incentive pilot is put out there, I'd like to see that there's a good foundation for that business. And I got upset the other night because the meeting, there was a business, I don't remember the name of the business, but they were given $15,000, and they closed that part of the business. So it's kind of like, a little disappointing. Even though they're still in business, what the money was given for, they're not really being.
What do you feel some of the priority areas for business development in Ulster County?
That's a good question. I would say we would have to evaluate the workforce, whether it's tech, whether it's construction. I know for myself, I was looking to join a couple of either the plumbers union or the electrical union, and it's an hour away. So for me, for instance, to do that, I would have to travel an hour in that distance and then an hour from there. So it's, for me, it doesn't work out. So I would have to see what this area, you know, what the qualifications of the people are, or use BOCES or training or something like that. I know there was a Tech City and the battery company that was supposed to come here. I don't know BOCES, how the training would go. I also had concerns about living there. I've worked for a company called EquiSpace Storage, and I lived where I worked, and it's not always the best thing. You know, you feel kind of sometimes like you're trapped. As for training, I have to really evaluate. I know a lot of people are coming up from the city and working from home now, but I don't know. To live here now, to support a family and make $80,000 a year, it's very tough. You know, most of the people are working for either the government or the quasi-government-funded organization. So to work for a business or open a business, I don't know how to answer.
No, that's fine. And again, this might be a little bit more difficult too, because you haven't been part of the IDA, and I know you're looking to understand it. But if appointed, what would you think would be the most important issues maybe facing the IDA moving forward?
As far as I know, the current issue is with the housing. The grants for the housing was just added again. A lot of people in the community aren't favorable to that, but I know that developers want to see a tax incentive to come. You know, it's To me, it's very interesting. I believe it was just added again after the Kingstonian, which was a lot of people weren't too happy about. So I would say that's probably the biggest thing right now. Prior to that, I'm not really sure. I know there were a bunch of things like the co-packing was involved, and they closed up. And that would be, we just were at Cornell, so for the farmers. I mean, that's like ideal. I'm still shaking my head on that. Like, how did that close up? I mean, you know, that's, the farmers need to freeze their products to send all over the country. So I don't know. And a lot of that, I kind of don't understand why, you know, we give incentives and it works out for a couple of years and then it closes up. You know, so that's what I want to learn, you know, why, and to see, you know, maybe they need additional help. Sometimes people don't ask for help. Sometimes the businesses don't want help. I'm not sure, but that's concerning to me.
What do you think the relationship between the IDA and this committee is?
And the committee?
This committee, yes.
Well, as far as I know, the legislature oversees that. So, from what I understand, grants and different things come from the economic development and then also get funneled into the IDA. So I think everyone kind of works together. But as for how it gets to either USITA or the IDA, I'm not sure.
So there's multi facets to the role of an IDA board member. What do you think is the most important aspect of this role?
I think you got to listen, and I think that you have to be open-minded, and you have to look towards the future, and you have to be understanding, and I think that you can't really put your own personal views, and you have to look what's best for the community. You know, you might not agree with something, but it would better be the community. So that's how I do it.
What experience do you have that will assist you in this role?
Well, I've worked for a lot of different local people, small businesses, big businesses, corporations, and I've always been the little guy and hands-on guy, changing things, looking how operations can be more effective. And that would probably be my role, is to look at things and to really look at the applications and you know, see what works best for everybody and maybe change things in the sense that maybe certain tax incentives they're looking for, you know, isn't the best, but there may be another one available or something like that. So I could use the legislature and ask, you know, are there any other different things that could help the business? I don't know. I know there's a lot involved with it. And like from what I understand, like the process, I guess, businesses just come in, they fill out a form, and then it goes through the IDA, and then you either get okayed or not okayed. And then, as far as I know, there's no change in the request, or it's not adjusted. So, you know, but you know, that's where I would have to learn.
Do you have ideas regarding how the IDA could best work with the county and municipal governments?
Well, that would be very important because You'd have to find out. Sometimes people in certain communities don't want the traffic from the business. So, you know, there would have to be, you know, study or something. Because the businesses don't want to waste their money either, but they might not necessarily know how the people in that area feel about them. Whereas maybe down the road, like in Saugerties or another area, may welcome that, or it may be a different type of commercial, you know, commercial infrastructure with the roads and stuff like that.
Thank you.
Do you have any questions for us?
Well, why is it that most people on the IDA, it looks like they're very smart, business people, people with MBAs, why do they stay like a year or 2 years and then we lose them? Why is that?
Did we ever discuss the two members that left abruptly? Did we have exit interviews with them?
You mean last term?
Yeah.
They said it was for personal reasons or work reasons.
Did we have an exit interview with them?
Peter did. Chair Criswell did. I think also it has to do with the fact that it's a volunteer position and there's a term, like a term is 2 years, so it depends on if they want to serve another term or not. I think that's part of it. I can't speak to, you know, why always, but I think it has a lot to do with volunteerism and term limits.
Just as an outsider, I look and working for so many different companies, like it takes a while for everyone to get up to speed for how like everything within the board works and that, and then all of a sudden it's like you're starting all over again. And I've worked for companies like that, and it's like it's great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you lose money, you lose customers,
yeah.
you lose respect for, you know, for crazy reasons.
That sounds like one.
I don't know. I'm a people person, and like I said, like that's like you have to listen
mm-hmm.
to your customers and whatnot. And if you don't listen, you're going to be out of business or you're going to lose money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, you know, that's what I see in government too. Like, people just come a year, a couple of years, and to me, it's disappointing.
Any other questions?
No.
No.
Thank you.
Thank you
for your time. I appreciate it. I was out of the country, and I appreciate you accommodating me. Thank you.
Thank you for
appreciate
coming
you.
Tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just since we're on the record, I had a phone conversation with Lynn Ecker, and I had an email exchange with Diane Mannion. Sorry about that.
And was there any frustrations with?
No, it was personal reasons. It was just personal situations.
Kirk Mahler will collect our score sheet after the next campaign, okay? You can come on in. So our second candidate is Randall Leverett.
With Steve Chimak.
Mr. Leverett, we're going to ask you. We're going to ask you a series of questions that we're asking everybody, whether they're a new applicant or a returning member. We're asking you the returning member questions because you served on the IDA board in the past. We'll go around the table. Everyone will ask you a question, respond, and then at the end, we can have a more improvisational conversation.
Sure.
Okay. Can you just give us your background with the IDA, how long you served on the IDA board, and you left, and now you're applying again. So give us a little insight?
Well, I served on the panel for 5.5 years. The last two of those years, I was chair, and I enjoyed it. It's a lot of work. It's very analytical. It fit with my background in training and education, and it was something that I enjoyed. I probably was a thorn in the side of people because I'm very analytical about the way that I view the IDA. My first thought about the agency is that it is predominantly there to protect the taxpayer. Our job, our role, is to analyze the application to make sure that it fits with the UTEP, that applicants will provide the jobs, well-paying, good-paying jobs that they promise, that they follow through, that they provide the proper documentation that is required at the end of each year for the pilot, that we ensure that the payments that are made promptly to the hosting communities wherever the projects, particular projects are. And then it's basically day-to-day running of an agency. So that's pretty much a lot of what I did. I was pretty much a hands-on chair when I was there, and I was, because I think that's what's needed. I think you need to ask tough questions. I think you need to put people who are looking for taxpayer dollars through the paces to make sure that they are going to give taxpayers value for their money, that taxpayers have a good return on the investment because it is an investment for them. Much as, you know, a business that comes to this community, they look for return on their dollar. So the role of the IDA is to make sure that those businesses give our taxpayers a good return on the dollars that we give to them or allow them to phase in over a period of time, whether it be 10 years or if it's a deviated pilot. I believe we reduced that from 25 years to 15 years. So those are, I think, the important things that an IDA member needs to be aware of, because their function is not to pick and choose projects and to decide what's good and what's bad. That's the legislature's job, the state's job. Our job is to analyze the applications that come in and make sure they meet the requirements under the Uniform Tax Exempt Policy, and then to either grant or not grant them because we think they can or can't do what they promise that they will do.
Why are you interested in coming back and continue to serve?
Oh, it's a way to give back to the community. I'm retired. I retired real early. I have a master's in community economic development, so I'm well versed in economic development. Before moving to New York, I'm not a native New Yorker. I've lived here for 23 years. I've lived in New Paltz for 23 years. I lived in Washington, D.C., where I was chair and CEO of the local community development corporation there that I basically gave my time for free because I was chosen as a Department of Housing and Urban Development HUD scholar in community economic development. So for free education, I had to give 2 or 3 years of my life working in economic development. So I did that in Washington, D.C. So it's kind of a passion. It fits with my background in public policy analysis and economic development. in finance. So I do it because I have a passion for it. I enjoy it. There's technical aspects for the position or serving on the IDA that I relish. And I left, not willingly, but I left because I wasn't reappointed because I probably made people unhappy. And I will be frank with you that if reappointed, I probably will make some of you unhappy because I make decisions based on what's on an applicant's paper. I don't really have connections with lots of different people here and businesses and politicians. I do what's required. I do what's in the law. And I'm not guided by what the politicians think we should be doing. I look at what's on the paper and then make a decision based on what's on that piece of paper.
You've mentioned a lot of what the role of an IDA board member is, including protecting the taxpayer, making sure the application fits the UTEP. You ask tough questions. You're looking for a return on investment for our taxpayers. And you don't pick and choose the projects. Any additional thoughts on the role of the IDA member?
Well, you know, I mean, one of the things that I would have liked to have had the opportunity to do, but I'm so mired in trying to reorganize and get things regrouped, I would have liked to have been able to spend more time with the Economic Development Committee in the form of educating members of the committee about what our role is, how we could work collaboratively, and the same would go with the Office of Economic Development. You know, for me, knowing the law that as I know it, which is here in front of me, it was the Bible that I always carried around with me when I was an IDA member. It's not the job of the IDA to think up projects. It's not the job of the IDA to promote a particular project. That's the Office of Economic Development's job to do those things. I see the IDA as the underwriter. When a salesperson sells you an insurance policy, they send it to the underwriter, and the underwriter makes a determination as to whether or not they're going to write that policy so that you can get the life insurance that you don't. But if you're a smoker and you've got, you know, gazillion other diseases or whatever that are a liability or potential liability that would require them to have a huge payout, they're not going to underwrite it. That's the IDA's job. Our job, or its job, is to be the underwriter in the process. You all can think about, we need housing. Under the law, housing is not an eligible thing unless it is housing with continuing care for seniors. And then only if it is I believe it's a state licensed G from the Healthcare Finance Administration, and that particular facility must be a not-for-profit, which then would make them eligible for Capital Resource Corporation funding, because that is the sister agency of the IDA, which permits it to lend to provide bonding and things for capital financing for building of those facilities, because a not-for-profit is not going to need sales tax exemption or mortgage tax exemption because they don't pay tax. So there are lots of little nitpicky things that you have to know that are in this law that don't always jive with what's politically feasible. And it's not the IDA's job to be political. It is the IDA's job to underwrite projects if they fit the UTEP and provide value to taxpayers in the form of well-paying jobs and longevity and making the payment to the hosting community. In fact, the IDA technically can't take any action whatsoever. And contrary to belief, most people think, oh, they're going to the IDA, I've got to roll over and play dead. The IDA cannot take action on anything unless the local planning board gives its okay. And once the planning board gives its okay, then the IDA can then begin its process of reviewing that application. But if there is no approval from the planning board, the IDA can't do a thing or should not do anything because it's illegal, because we're not supposed to take action prior to planning board approval.
We're asking the candidates, have you spoken or communicated with the county executive or executive staff on your desire to remain to apply to the IDA?
No.
Thank you very much.
How did you find out about the position?
Kevin Roberts.
If reappointed, would you be accommodating your schedule to attend all regular subcommittee and public hearings?
Yeah, I didn't miss any meetings except for when I was in Paris in the 6 years that I was there. So I've not missed not one meeting.
Your time with the IDA last time around, specific accomplishment, you think that during that time that you really stuck out, that you're really proud of, that the board actually did get above and beyond?
I'll put you on the spot, right? No, I think the board did a lot of good things, and it's not just me, because you have to bring six other people along.
Sure.
Trust me, they weren't the easiest group of people to work with. We were able to find that there were lots of things that were not managed as well as they should have been managed. If my memory serves me correctly, let's back up a little. The first thing, and one of the requirements, that applicants who receive their pilots, they're required to file reports with the agency at the end of each year. Me being the technocrat that I am, I went through and worked with the staff to find out what that reporting looked like. And I think we found that only 48% of the applicants were filing those reports. We changed that. Those applicants deserve to provide us the information that we need in order to report to the state at the end of each year, like we're required to do. And a lot of them were not doing it, and they were changing. Oh, we sold this to this person, and oh, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And, if I had been there, because we found this out just as I was being shoved out the door, my next step was to go after those companies that had not provided those reports, if they didn't provide them in the next month, that they would begin, we would begin the process of clawbacks for each and every one of them. It would have made a lot of people unhappy, but that is the requirement. They are supposed to provide those reports to people, to the body, so that we can provide them to you, so that we can provide them to the state. And if they don't, they're violating the law. And it is our job as members of the IDA to make sure that they follow the law, not just get the pilots or the money.
Sir, would you be able to briefly provide a hypothetical example of a great IDA project and why it would be a great IDA project?
I can give you an idea of what a past good project is, but I would be pressed to give you an idea of what a good one would be, because it's not the role of the IDA to provide ideas as to what would be a good project without seeing what the financials look like, what the job is, what's being offered. It's not our role. I can give you examples of good projects that were and have been induced, Woodland Pond and New Paltz. Hundreds of jobs, well-paying jobs, doctors, nurses, physicians, senior staff, blah, blah, blah. Mohonk Mountain House, we helped them do their spa. which is a recreation facility. I don't know if those members of the committee know that there are four or five different things that the IDA has the ability to do. We can, or it can, do industrial pollution control facility. It can do recreation facility. It can do a horse racing facility. It can do a railroad facility. It can do educational cultural facilities, meaning museums. There are lots of things that the IDA can do, and before I left, one of the things I'm thinking about, instead of giving the money away to some of these other things, is trying to return some of those funds that we collect in the form of fees back to some of the hosting communities to help do some of the things in their communities that they might not want to spend the money on, but people are complaining about. And I'll give you an example. I'm an avid tennis player. I usually play at Rosendale, near their pool. That facility is a mess. One of my thoughts was to help them redo those tennis courts and the basketball courts. It's a recreational facility. It is a public facility. And it's a way to return tax dollars that were given back to those communities. So, hey, Rosendale wouldn't have to spend the money to clean up that basketball court and the tennis court. So, I mean, there are lots of things that the IDA can do with the money that it has if it's not being begged and hounded by external sources to give to pet projects that belong to other people that are not within the mission or the role of the agency.
Thank you.
Are you on the board for Woodland Pines currently?
I am currently, yes, I am.
How long have you been on their board?
I've been on their board, I think I'm going into my second year.
You joined after the IDA project went through for Woodland Pines?
Actually, no, I wasn't on the board when their project came through. I was an IDA board member, but not on Woodland Pines board at the time. It was after I was kicked off the IDA that they were like, ooh, let's grab this guy. So I joined their board.
Sorry. So what do you think are the most important issues the IDA is going to face over the next term, looking into the future, and what are some priorities for business development in Ulster County?
Well, let's take the second part of that question first. It's not the role of the IDA to do business development. So I don't think there is a role for the IDA to do business development. That's the Office of Economic Development's responsibility. It's the legislature's responsibility to set the path and the course of where the county needs to go, should go, with respect to business and growth. The IDA can play a role in that as long as the projects that come to it fit within the role and the law with respect to the IDA, but it's not our role to do business development. The first part?
What do you think are the most important issues the IDA is going to face over the next term?
Honestly, I wouldn't know because I haven't been there for a couple of years, but I would presume it would face what I faced when I was there, and that is reviewing projects, some more popular than others, some with the backing of political folks with connection, and perhaps being pressed upon to make it happen, when in fact it may or may not or should not happen.
What do you think the relationship between the IDA and this committee should be?
It's an important one. I know that in the bylaws of the agency, one of the things that the chair is supposed to do, and it was one of the things that I prepared for the committee when I was chair, I prepared a report to the committee and would have relished the opportunity to come in and talk to the committee quarterly, monthly, whenever, about what we're doing, why we did what we did, and to help educate you about what the role of that agency is in relation to what your responsibilities are as legislators. I mean, and I can't put myself in the position of the authorizing people in Albany when they created this statute, but what they've essentially done and allowed you all to do is to delegate your responsibility for providing incentives to local people who, in an effort, I would guess, to take the politics out of that process. Yet it doesn't work very well because the politics remains in the process where it shouldn't be. So I see my role as, or the role of the IDA and as a member of the is making sure that you guys don't have egg on your faces for us making bad decisions, because at the end of the day, you've got seven people who are unelected making tax policy in your county. So those people need to be mindful of that, and they need to handle the business of the IDA with all due care, so that we are doing what we're supposed to be doing and nobody walks away with egg on our face. And when we do something that is unpopular, it may be nice if the legislature says the IDA is doing what it's supposed to be doing, and just because you want them to do something doesn't mean they have to do something. If it doesn't, you can't prove that you're worthy, you're not going to get a pilot. You know, one of the things that was interesting to me when I first joined the board 4 or 5 years ago, you know, I kept hearing that, you know, applicants fill out their applications and the matrix tells them what they're entitled to. Applicants aren't entitled to anything. They earn it. They earn it by providing jobs. They earn it by providing facilities for people to work and to earn a good living, to stop renting, to get off of the social safety net, so that they become taxpayers in the community, which comes back to making all of Ulster County better. What's the point in having new jobs come in and they're low-wage jobs, and people still need to have the social safety net to help make ends meet? If the IDA can't make sure that people are going to get decent jobs out of the pilots that are being phased in over 10, 15, 25 years, what's the point? That is the return on the dollar for the taxpayer.
There are many facets to the role of an IDA board member. What do you think is the most important aspect?
Analyzing the application, asking the tough questions, pulling the curtain back on the smoke screen that comes in sometimes when the applicants put an application before the agency. Because let's be honest, they're not very honest all the time. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
We have a discussion already, but I'm going to ask, what experience do you have that will assist you in this role? I think you answered it, but please feel free to add anything.
Served on the panel for 5-6 years, served as chair for 2, master's in economic development, political science major, public policy analysis. I'm sorry.
All good.
The final question, which again, I think you've primarily answered, but if there's anything else you want to add, what ideas do you have regarding how the IDA could best work with the county and municipal government?
Again, coming to the Economic Development Committee is the way for us to present ideas for things that the county can do as the legislative body you authorize, the things that the county executive and their staff, in theory, can and should do, appropriate the money for that. But if there was a plan with respect to what kind of development and things that need to be done in the county so that we can lure businesses from other places, we could and should be able to help with that, not the full body, but perhaps the, whoever the chair is, but they have to have a mastery of what economic development is. You know, I had a thought with, you know, the waterfront. I don't spend a lot of time in Kingston if I don't participate in stuff like this. I spend most of my time in New Paltz. But one of the things that I thought about would be, you know, a project where we revitalize that area down by the waterfront where there's, I believe there's a transportation museum down there that's kind of ratty. Here we have an opportunity for the IDA to do something that is cultural, that is museum. We could help build that. We could create projects that are down there that might include some hotels, get with a developer and build up that area down there so that it's got a lot more parks and place for people to come and congregate other than the restaurants. You know, I believe there are boats and ferries and things that go up and down. What is that? Is that Rondo?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know? I mean, there are lots of things that you can think about. Local Initiative Support Corporation does a lot of things that, you know, would be helpful to a committee like this, where they come in and they sit down and you talk to them about what kind of economic development do you want to do? What kind of projects do you think that your community can withstand or take on? And they work with you to do these things. Those are the kinds of things that I think we should be doing as members of the IDA, working with this committee, and you all working with the Office of Economic Development, or the three of us working in tandem as opposed to, here's the Office of Economic Development. We got this company that we really like and is friends with somebody over here, and we want you to give them a pilot. If you don't, we're not going to be happy. And out you go in 2 days. It's not the way it should work. I've been a strong proponent that, you know, the term should be staggered for IDA. Just had another applicant say, you know, you get people come in and they're gone in 2 years. Let me tell you, it took me 3 years to learn all of this stuff. And we bounce people every 2 years. And it takes a lot to get a handle on what needs to be done. And ultimately what happens is you don't have an IDA that's being run by the members that you put on that panel. You have an IDA that's being run by the lawyer who says, we can make this work. Let's get it done. And that's not the way it should be. It's not the way it should be.
Any other questions?
Thank you. Thank you. You mentioned that the board you were with was not the easiest group to work with. They voted you chair?
Yes. So. I had been, well, here we go. I had been vice chair. And the chair was sent away, kind of like I was. And as vice chair, I stepped into the chair, and then I was elected by the board as chair.
Thank you.
So.
Any other questions from the committee?
I have a quick one. Do you have any thoughts on how you would work with the executive director? The new IDA executive director.
Very closely. You know, as CEO, when I was chair, CEO and chair, I kind of lived with the executive director. It was after I was gone that they decided to split the role and give the executive director's job the title of CEO, but in all the years that I had been there, it had been, it had rested with the chair of the organization as well as CEO. And I think that is probably the best thing, because we are the people who were chosen by the committee and the legislature. So we have ultimate responsibility for the agency. And so the management of that agency should rest with the chair and not with staff that the board hires to do the day-to-day work.
Thank you.
How do you find consensus with folks that you disagree with?
You bet. Sometimes you can't find consensus. I'm not one to go along to get along when it comes to analyzing an IDA project. I can tell you I voted no and have been the only no on three or four projects that came before the panel. Yozman Towers, that's an example. We were sold a bill of goods and told that, you know, it's senior housing and this, that, and the other. My question was, what is the county's housing authority doing about the poor conditions within that facility? And if that facility is getting money from the Department of Housing and Urban Development for Section 8 housing or whatever it is, how is it that the Housing and Urban Development Department comes in there on an annual review every single year and has not cited them for the problems that you claim that are there? Didn't sit well, but I asked the question and I voted no, because it wasn't something that the IDA should have been doing. I know that the elephant in the room is probably the Kingstonian. That application never came to the IDA when I sat as chair. I talked to them about it, and I told them that it had housing and that it was a hotel. Hotels aren't forbidden under the statute. They can be provided for if they are part of a larger project. And let me give you an example of a larger project. I'm Walt Disney. I want to build a theme park in Kingston. I want to put a hotel on it. The IDA and give Disney the money, not that they need it, and Disney can build hotels there. Disney can't build a hotel in Kingston, and me, Randall, show up and say, I'm going to build a hotel across the street and call it recreation and get a pilot. It's not part of the larger project. That is what the law says. You can have accommodations if it's part of the larger project, not a standalone hotel, which were popular when I first came on. And I voted against them too, because they were against the law. Wasn't my personal feeling. Housing is against the law. It's not what the law provides for. You all might want housing and need housing. I'm not anti-housing. I think people need a decent place to live and to stay. But the law does not provide for housing unless it is for senior housing with continuing care, which is not for profit, which has a state G license. So no matter how you twist it,
and how much pressure you put on the seven people who will eventually sit on that panel, housing is illegal under this law. And unless Albany changes it, then we can do it. But right now, under this law, Article 18A, it is not eligible for any kind of inducement from the IDA, ever.
Do you have any questions for us?
None.
Well, thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
Meeting with
thank
us.
You. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Randall.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I would like to propose, because we got started late and we're looking at 7, almost quarter to 8 already, is that we go into executive session later at the end to discuss appointments for the IDA and move into our resolutions at hand so that we can get through those, because I think folks are here for other reasons.
Good call.
What's the will of the committee?
I'm in favor of it.
Yes. All in favor?
Aye.
Executive session. Okay, at the end. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, so let's move into resolution 160, authorizing the Ulster County Executive to execute a contract with the New York State Empire State Development Corporation for state funding for the implementation of Restore New York Communities Initiative Grant and amending the 2024 Ulster County Budget Department of Economic Development.
Motion to discuss.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. So let's discuss that.
160. Yeah. Absolutely. Good evening, everyone. Actually, this is the second Restore New York grant that the county's been involved in. The first one was the Barrel Patch Bridge, which was approved by the economic development committee a few months ago. This particular grant will provide funding for the I-Park 87 project, whereby I-Park 87 is the LLC and the corporate corporation is Natural Resources. The funding will support remediation, CapEx, and development of Building 1 and Building 2-1 on the east side of the campus. To date, I-Park 87 LLC has spent $17 million in terms of remediation work. In addition to that, this funding is also part of a broader economic development project, whereby the County Offices of Economic Development, OET, as well as BOCES and other agencies are going to be housed in this facility. It looks like, you know, this funding will also provide I-Park 87 the gap finance it needs in order to secure bank financing going forward. The project that's been approved by ESD, where it's, you know, we are facilitators of that. And we've been in constant contact with I-Park 87 over the development project timeline. So, as I mentioned earlier, it's part of a broader scope in terms of, you know, economic development for the site, and it's one that I think certainly deserves, you know, your attention.
Is there anybody on the committee that has a question for Director Lynch or a question on the resolution?
First, I'll ask you, I have some specific questions, but you came here and this, a lot of the deal and the deals over at Tech City with Natural Resources and Mr. Cotter were either done or evolving. Have you had any issues? Had you been here, would you have done anything different? And do you have any issues with how things are going thus far? would you rather have seen something done differently?
Yeah, but that's really a double-edged question, right? I mean, certainly being a quarterback at this time of day, at this point, most likely not, because this is a project that, given the economic climate, certainly with high interest rates, has increased the cost of capital for any developer that would want to come in and develop the site. Mr. Carter's organization was the only one who took on the task to implement this project at this scale, which is approximately about $47 million. And given that kind of commitment and his track record, I would be in favor of having him involved in this project. He's working on projects in Yonkers, Brewster, Fishkill, and he's had a strong track record in this kind of development. So I would be very positive. Again, with the caveat of the economic climate.
Sure. All right, now some specific questions. I will say to that he was the only game in town. I have multiple sources that said Tim Wiederman did not get back. Seemed like it was, we wanted to go this direction, and Tim Wiederman did not get back with some pretty interesting concepts and companies that were interested in my thought. That's neither here nor there. Unfortunately, you weren't here. I wish you were. You mentioned $17 million in remediation. Part of the original contract, I believe, was they owed us $7 million in remediation. Two questions on the remediation. Have they given us any invoices or receipts to prove the work they've done?
We are in negotiations with them now in terms of getting those invoices.
So we have not, have we got a single receipt?
Yes and no, because we're working with ESD and putting it in a format so that ESD will accept it and will, in parallel, use those same invoices to present to the people.
Have they proved any of the $17 million that you just mentioned in remediation that was part of the original contract? Have they proved with an actual physical invoice? Do we have any invoices proving any of that money that they've done?
We don't.
We don't. That's something that I think we should have probably changed and probably worked that in. Is there anything worked in, second on the remediation, any of the grants that they are getting, are we allowing them to use grant money to alleviate the remediation that they owe us? We
all,
so they're not really, so when we said $12 million, it's really just a $5 million deal because they're getting grants to do the work.
Yeah.
I mean, when somebody's going to pay you $7 million by working out a building, you assume you're not going to give them the money to do the work. We're the government, state, and county. We've essentially signed a deal for $12 million, seven of which was supposed to be them putting money right into the upgrading of the facility there, and we've actually put the money in.
I mean, like a credit.
Okay. Was that and we wrote that into the original contract? Or was that, did we amend the contract to allow that to happen, or did the contractor speak to it?
In the ESD contract, it's specific that the funds can be used for remediation work.
We specifically say you're giving us $7 million, but it's okay if we give you the money to do the work?
Well, not exactly.
Okay.
Because we're under the auspices of the ESD, so as long as it's the law, I mean, however Joe figures out his reimbursement mechanism in order to take credit for work that he said he would do under our contract. So.
All right, so I'm going to stop referring to it as a $12 million deal and just a $5 million deal. Of the $5 million, have they been paying us? How many payments, how many installments have they made of the $5 million? I mean, they owe us $5 million for a while now.
That's right.
Yeah. Referring to the mortgage, or referring?
I'm referring to the original contract where they were gonna basically pay $12 million for what we gave them. $7 million was supposed to be remediation that they did that we're now finding out that we did that they haven't even supplied us receipts for. And secondly, the $5 million that they owed us and owe us, how much of that $5 million have they paid?
It's referring to the mortgage.
Two separate things going on here. We're discussing a grant from Empire State Development and the pass-through through the county, and that's what's before this committee. This question is regarding the mortgage and the note, which PETA holds currently. And there were two separate transactions. There was one for East and there was one for West. For East,
campus, there has been, it's a 5-year note, and there has been one annual payment towards that of principal and interest.
When is the next payment due?
There is currently, this is separate from this, so the receipt of board.
Hold on just for 1 second. It's not separate from this. It's all having to do with more tax dollars that you're asking us to allow to go through to this project. It is directly related. If these are appropriate questions to see where we're at, where we're going forward, as we have you ask us to approve $10 million more dollars to be passed through here, and it won't be the last time. So I think we need to know where we're at with this organization. That's fine.
Which is, you know, currently held by UCF for that, the county surplus, the property to UCF. So there is a request from Mr. Cotter that for a, as the development of the site has taken somewhat longer than kind of initially anticipated, and as there have been some additional layers of probably complexity, I don't know technically if the appropriate word for securing bank financing, the capital stack, et cetera, they have asked for a deferment of the mortgage payments.
So they don't want to pay us right now?
Because there has been discussion regarding it has to do with their ability to secure the bank financing to actually do the work on the site, which will then result in a viable site.
Well, they don't want to put a lot of money in. They're looking for, the way I understand it is, they're looking to get bank funding, but in order to get the funding, they need leases, and they haven't gotten the private leases that they had, I guess, anticipated and we believe that they were going to get, which is why we're now in the process of emptying out BOCES at Esopus, moving it over there, spending a ton more money to bring over existing jobs. We were supposed to get new jobs and private jobs. So now we're just moving over government jobs that already exist to this property. And because of that, they haven't been able, because they haven't brought in the private leases, they haven't been able to borrow against those private leases and raise the money. So now they don't have the money to pay us.
Yeah, I mean, you just accurately described, you know, how the market is working. I mean,
are they paying their school taxes? That was a big deal, right? Get this back on the tax rolls on some level. Have they paid their school taxes?
To my knowledge, and I checked the last time, it was a couple of weeks ago, and they were not current on the fall.
Okay, so they're not even paying their school taxes.
Well, I think what has happened with the taxes, though, they are disputing the taxes, and you do have a period in which you don't have to pay until it's resolved. So that's the status of their school taxes.
What happens in the contract? It sounds like there's things. What if we don't agree to default on their payments? What is contractually, what is our ability if we get to a point where we do want to just go another direction, as we needed to do with Ginsburg when a lot of the same things started to happen, when or maybe we decide, okay, we're not just going to turn this into a government facility. We were promised and we thought we were getting private sector, new private sector jobs. We're not going that direction. What if we wanted to pull out? What is our options in the contract if they don't live up to, let's say they don't provide the receipts and they haven't done the remediation they're supposed to do. Let's say they don't ever pay their school taxes. Let's say they can't pay us the money they owe us. What are our options in the contract that we have?
I don't understand. Do you understand?
Yeah, I understand from the mortgage perspective, you're looking at really two pathways, right? There's a technical default in terms of not providing required information, and there's a payment default. There are remedies to the top. The worst case scenario, if he doesn't pay, he walks away. You know, we're not on the hook, but we can relet the property under the note. In terms of the contract, ESD has its own requirements in terms of recapture. It builds certain companies. So there is a way, there are remedies, in other words, to either recapture funds or, you know, abide by the covenants in the mortgage.
Have we amended the contract over the last year to change any of that verbiage, any of the verbiage in the contract to make it different or as far as us clawing the property back or our ability to claw the property back? Everything in the contract has stayed the same?
In the note?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, are we discussing the contracts
You're answering my questions pretty good.
Well, because there's two things going on. We're talking about the mortgage with Nisida and
yep.
the contract with ESD. So
yep. I was referring more to Nisida.
Has the mortgage note changed very much from...
Who is Nisida? Who do I ask? One last question.
And ask me.
And then...
And her.
Okay. Has the contract been amended?
No.
No. In no way has the contract with USITA and Natural Resources been amended.
No. We have not signed off on any changes,
no.
and it has to be voted on.
But can we,
one
dial it back to this resolution?
I hope I'm not the only one in the room that doesn't think we should be exploring what is happening now with this company before we allow another $10 million to be poured into it, tax dollars. I know it's state, and the state tax dollars grow on trees, and our taxes don't, I guess, and we're not part of the state and our tax dollars. We should just never worry about it. We're going to be asked to do more soon.
You'd have to talk to the governor. She's the one that appropriated this to them.
Then why is it before us?
Because it's a pass-through
exactly.
us.
And there's a reason that we have the job to either accept it or not. One last question.
Thank you.
Testing
I've been
results.
Recognized.
Thank you, Legislator Nolan.
I think that the questions that have come have helped bring us up to date on where things are, and it seems like it's a process, and it's a complicated process, it's a somewhat messy process. In terms of this resolution, we have monies from Ulster County residents that have gone to New York State and could go somewhere else, or they could come back to New York State to help support a further exploration, if you want to call it that, of this, the viability of this project, and to support this project, which we think is still viable, at least I do. Hearing all these questions, hearing the answers, I still think that this is viable. I do think that's a judgment for each member of this committee and the legislature to make if this moves out of committee. But to me, that's what the questions and answers get us to, is it bad enough that we should be thinking about pulling out and saying no to $10 million? I don't hear anything that makes me want to say no to $10 million. So I just want to put that on the record.
Thank you. Legislator Hewitt.
I do find it disturbing that this is how our society runs, that they're able to leverage their power and influence and money, that they don't really have to pay their taxes, they don't have to pay us back, and they can hire lawyers. If we gave $10 million to our constituents to share, our local businesses would start thriving. So we have this idea that giant companies can save our economy when we have local Main Street business owners that are keeping it together. So I do find it disturbing. Thank you.
Chair Criswell?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify one statement that I heard about us putting BOCES into that facility, and that's not us who put it in. The BOCES board put BOCES into that facility.
Legislator
Lex,
did you want to say something?
Let me go first, then I'll go with
you. I'm sure there was no county influence with regards to BOCES. I'm sure they said, you know what, we just spent millions of dollars renovating the building, which many parts was fairly new already. Let's go over to that place over there. I'm sure that's how it went. They came up with themselves. Were there any liens? Were liens removed? Did we have liens on any of the property that we had transferred over?
We have a note.
And we removed nothing from that. Okay, that's good. And the last thing is there's a lot of testing results and studies that, I mean, I even printed that off. You see this website that we're supposed to be given over to the county. Have we gotten all those?
I think we have that.
You think?
But right. I would want to see the specific list of what you're referring to.
Kevin, I handed you one of the sheets I printed out that references some of the stuff, but I just thought we'd know whatever testing results and studies were supposed to be done. I think there was some air quality things, there's a couple different things.
Do you want me to share with you?
Well, it's on her website. No, I interrupt. That was just one. I
something different. This has to do with the work and the rehabilitation of the front building, which has not been completed yet.
So we haven't got any of those?
Because the work has not been done yet. This is the memo from the safety office regarding if you were, you know, to develop offices in that space,
which
previously has some documents to discuss this issue. What are the kind of standard testing that you do to make sure that it's a safe space for people to be in? But this has nothing to do with either topic A, topic B, it's kind of like a third.
Plus another part of the campus, you're saying. But so have we got any studies, any water reports or anything have been done?
So there were in the memo.
That's all right. I just printed that off. We can handle that another. I just printed that off before I came and was literally reading as I was driving and saw some studies
about,
and stuff.
Mainly about.
But none of that has been done yet that we know of.
Legislator Stewart.
I just have a question for Director Lynch. She had said that this particular company has a strong track record of working on other development projects in neighboring counties. I was wondering if you could maybe expound on some of those.
Yeah, certainly. In Fishkill, we have a similar project. We have three, maybe larger. But it's a former distribution facility. He's working on a $50 million booster, rehabbing some downtown city of Brewster. He's responsible for the Lionsgate project and Yonkers. He's also doing an expansion of that for $50 million. He's also done work in Greenwich, Connecticut and Bridgeport. He's well known throughout the state in terms of the type of development he does. It's mixed use, where he tries to bring in innovation, manufacturing, and also a component of government, which is the plan project here in Iowa. So he has a pretty solid track record, strong bank relationships, very important, especially during this economic time. And he's made it clear that he's very much engaged in this project and seeing it through in the city. So.
And do you have any insight on how this company is related to the county governments in those other cities, if they had a good relationship or was contentious?
Actually, from some of the surveying that I've done just visiting Yonkers as well as Fishkill, it's been very positive. He's taking advantage of the demographics, highway access, workforce, and also, getting governmental support to kind of supplement his overall. So it's been a formula that's worked for him. It's an opportunity. I personally think that he'll see it one way.
There's a match requirement, correct, in the grant, and that one for one.
Yeah, it's a one for one requirement. And as I mentioned at the onset, its total capital budget is almost $50 million.
Oh, just one thing on that point before I get back to what I was originally going to say. This is probably the first time he is acquiring property from a government. All of his other projects he bought from IBM, he bought from other development corporations, or you forgot one down in Long Island was aviation. It was Grumman or one of those.
Yeah, and Suffolk.
And but anyway, so I mean, I think it's limited to going to the planning board or something like that, his past projects. I mean, he didn't buy them from a government, so I think this is a little different than his past projects.
He didn't really buy it.
But getting back to the $10 million, the governor came down here, had a big press release, had a big signing. Everybody was there. Everybody's happy. She gives us the $10 million, and it's a pass-through. It's an investment in Ulster County. It's an investment in the Hudson Valley. And if we turn around and just give it back or say we're not going to use it, or I don't know, you think the governor's going to want to invest in the Hudson Valley or Ulster County again? I don't think so, because, they went through the whole process of having a press release and everything else. And then if we turn the money back, I don't know. I don't think that bodes well for our economic development.
So on that note, can I get a motion?
I have one comment.
Sure.
I believe the $10 million is going to pass. Like Kirby said, it's hard to turn down $10 million. Alone even bringing some issues in front of us. I'd just like to remind this body that our leadership and oversight has made changes before. We should be paying more attention to this project. None of you were here when the jail debacle was going on, like before my time too. But, you know, leadership in this body made some, big changes to that facility or the way that was done and the way we bid out projects in the future.
Mm-hmm.
We also, just last year, the leadership right here in this body, made a big stink about the Elizabeth Street project. We pulled the plug on that. We're going in a completely different direction. You know, if the governor knew about everything that was going on, she might not want to invest $10 million in this project. But we're here. We're moving forward with it for now. And see where it goes.
Thank you. Is there a motion to adopt the recommendation?
Motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is adopted. We're moving on to resolution number 161, approving the execution of a contract for $10 million. Entered into by the county iPark 87 LLC and the Department of Economic Development. Any discussion? Motion to adopt.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is adopted. Resolution number 162, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Department of Labor to allow the Department of Planning to act as census-designated affiliate Department of Planning. Any discussion or questions?
One question. Dennis, how much of your time or your department's time is going to be dedicated to this?
Not much. We do. We've done this on an annual basis. It's really a lot more. As we near the decennial census on a 10-year basis, a lot more time gets devoted. This gives us access to essentially the boundary surveys to come out to make sure they're accurate, and also to make sure that sometimes the census will release products ahead of time, and we'll have an opportunity to review those ahead of time just in case there's any quotes or concerns with respect to the data that comes out. But I would say probably less than 2% of our time is engaged here.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
For my own education, what would be the other common options if it wasn't you, who else would we designate? Mean in terms of who could help to be a census data affiliate?
Yeah.
My sense is that it would be very difficult to change census data affiliates. We also have to sign non-disclosure agreements associated with these, with the work that comes out as well. And typically around the state, most planning departments around the state are census data designated affiliates.
Yeah, that was really where I was getting to.
Yep.
Does anything everyone pretty much thank you.
Is there a motion to adopt the resolution?
Motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is adopted. Resolution number 163, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $6,680, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered into by the county Transpo Group USA, Inc., Department of Planning. Discussion or questions?
I have a question.
Please.
But you have to move it.
Move for discussion.
Second.
Where did Dennis go? Oh, there he is.
I'm trying to hide. I wasn't successful.
Was it public outreach and response part of the original contract?
This is an accelerated and more public outreach and response, and this is related to, I believe, the long-range transportation plan.
So it's not anything that was
in the original contract. This is related to the work that we are doing as it relates to the coordinated development plan.
Okay, so it wasn't anything that was in the original contract.
It was, but we...
You're expanding the role.
Exactly. We're doing a lot of senior work right now for this. That's what we're doing. We're doing a lot of senior. We're interviewing seniors, and we're actually going out and doing face-to-face interviews, and it's a little bit beyond what was in the original contract.
Thank you.
Any other discussion or questions? Can we move this resolution for adoption? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Resolution 164, setting a public hearing on the tentative budget of Ulster County Community College for the year 2024 to 2025. Discussion or questions? Could we move this?
Make a motion to adopt.
I would appreciate that.
I'll second.
So oh, good. We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. It's adopted. So this is going to set the public hearing on SUNY Ulster Community College proposed budget 2024 to 2025 budget for Tuesday, May 14th at 6:45 p.m. The college will attend the April 30th committee meeting to give a budget presentation, and we look forward to that in April.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can welcome. Oh, you have one. Not yet. Sorry. Please stay. Okay, resolution number 165, establishing a capital project number 696, SUNY Ulster, water service line replacement and approving the work order with the Dormitory Authority of the State of New York, DASNY, shall we call it?
Yep.
Thank you. For feasibility study related to the capital project number 696, water service line replacement, Ulster County Community College, amending the 2024 capital fund budget, SUNY Ulster. Questions or discussion on this resolution?
I will move it for adoption.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The resolution is adopted. You can go home now.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And you can drink more.
Yes, please bottle all your water over there. Resolution number 167, establishing a policy to dedicate revenue generated from the collection of occupancy tax to Housing and Transportation Initiatives Department of Finance. Discussion or questions?
Motion for discussion.
Second on the motion. Do we need a second?
Second.
Legislator Nolan?
Yeah, I haven't discussed this with anybody yet, but I'm just continuing to think that I'm not sure why occupancy tax is being singled out here for this. It seems to me like this is a general taxation matter. And so I'd like us to consider why we would tag this to occupancy tax. I know that we recently doubled the occupancy tax, and so there maybe is a thought that is bringing in more money and therefore we should tag it. But that might not be the case. We might have a year in which general sales tax is really very strong and occupancy tax for some reason, like the COVID pandemic, is low. And then it would affect this in a way that I think would not be helpful. So I'd like to, I haven't brought this to the sponsor, and so it's an idea that I'm just bringing here to this committee. But I think it would bear some reflection maybe before passing this out in its current form.
In answer to part of that question, this is dedicating that money. So it's attached to this much like when you have a gas tax, it has to go towards transportation, which it doesn't. I shouldn't have used that as a bad example. They are stating that a portion of this tax has to go towards housing and UCAT. As far as the general tax, I mean, that goes into the big black hole and it gets disseminated as you need it, but they're requiring this tax to go towards UCAT and housing. Now to my original reason for raising my hand, when this was all under adoption, there was supposed to be a percentage of this going to tourism, because tourism generates, you know, it's why people come here and rent a room or rent or go to a spa or whatever. And I don't see that in a resolution at all. You've got 25% of the overage tax, I'll call it, going to housing, 25% going to UCAT, and the 5% that was in the original document, if you will, that was scheduled for tourism has dropped away. And I don't know why that is.
So originally, I thought it was 10%, but maybe it was 5%. And what we had done, which was different than most other states, when we sent off our request to have a bed tax to the state, we actually put that in, that mandate on ourselves, and then we were almost having the state hold us accountable. It didn't need to be done that way. We could have passed a local resolution to mandate like this, that we're going to spend X number of dollars, X percentage of dollars. So when we redid this last bed tax, we pulled that out, that tourism requirement, and we were going far beyond what we were even requiring ourselves on our tourism department was much higher than whatever the percent, 5 or 10%, whatever even was. My overall point is, and I agree with both of you, but and on, to add to that is, if we have the money and we want to do an initiative, we want to spend money on housing, we want to spend money on transportation, then we'll do what's within our means to do. We don't have to mandate ourselves an arbitrary number that we're going to spend on something that we may not even have in a certain year. Then we'd have to go back and undo our own self-mandate. Why are we mandating ourselves something we can go ahead and do anytime we'd like? And you also put yourself on a clock where you're going, well, we said we'd spend X millions of dollars on housing, and there's not really a lot going on, so there's a developer over there, give it to him or her. And they may come to us knowing that we're creating something that I don't think needs to be created. We can end up doing whatever it is we want to do when we have the money to do it and when we have a good project in front of us. Why we would mandate ourselves, like I said, an arbitrary number to just go in and try to do, doesn't make a lot of sense. No private business would ever do that. I mean, I don't know why any government would do it. And I like, it sounds nice because it's got housing and we want to tell the community we're doing something and we just raised this tax and we're going to do something about housing. Let's do it when the project works and when we have the money.
I have a list. Let's later do it.
Thank you. I think you make some great points. My thought is that it's symbolic and important in case the legislative values change over time. And it kind of shows that this could be sustainable by building it into an annual fund.
Legislator Litz.
Oh, good. I mean, we've already dedicated $15 million towards housing. I think this is an attempt to make it sustainable. And it's not like you're never going to get money, because there's always going to be a tax that comes in. And during COVID or whatever, it might be very low, but there was still tax paid. So they just want to make sure they get the portion of the tax. And when this first came about, and I was on that committee, I wanted a percentage of this to go into a fund to offset future county increases in taxes. Because what we're seeing is a lot of budgets being based upon last year or the past couple of years, and there was an influx of federal money in those budgets that is not sustainable. We're going to have to go back and revisit budgets from the 2000 prior to or 2019 budget cycle, because we're not going to have $17 million infused into our into our county going forward after what? It's 2026 is one of the last payments we can use. So we can't get used to having those big budgets because that money's not going to be there. And I believe at that point in time, what's going to catch up with us is that we're going to have to raise county taxes. And this tax is generated by individuals that come into our town to visit. It's tourism money. So why not have them bore some of our tax increase that eventually I believe is going to be necessary down the road? Because after the federal money's gone, we're going to have to live, we're going to have to learn how to live on what we used to live on, and that's not going to be an easy thing. And I think the net sum of that is raising county taxes, because people don't like their services cut. They like the services that they get, but we're not going to have that backup, funding that came in from the federal government. So I had asked that, you want to put it towards housing? Okay. You want to put it towards UCAT? Okay. I still think there should be a component of tourism here because that's who generates this tax for us. And then I thought there should have been a component set aside to offset future county taxes because we are going to have to increase taxes down the road somewhere.
Chair Criswell, you're next.
Yeah, legislator, let's say what I was thinking about, which was that this is really a mechanism to help us fund the Housing Action Fund kind of in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
Legislator Collins, I have you on the list.
To me, it's an investment in housing, which is an investment in our people, an investment in our county, and an investment in our growth. I think that's what we're saying. We're saying we're going to take this money. It's going to come from people that visit us and been invested in our county for not just for our people and for housing for the future of the growth of our county. Because more housing will bring more people, will bring more money, which will bring more taxes, which will solve the problem that legislator Litz mentioned where we're falling short in taxes.
Senator Nolan.
Yeah, so I think Legislator Litz has clarified if from the general fund we can't dedicate in this way. So that makes sense. And all these comments say that this is basically planning a funding stream for initiatives that we want to move forward. That makes sense. And both housing and public transportation seem reasonable to make sure we have a funding stream that this occupancy tax is pretty steady and rising because tourism dollars have been rising, continuing to rise. So that makes sense. I would favor adding in a percentage that would be dedicated back to tourism for the reasons that Legislator Litz has brought up. As long as tourism monies, taxation monies, both sales tax and occupancy tax come in, then this is funded well. So I would like to make sure that some portion of this, and maybe we're already doing that from general fund, and so we don't need to do it, but I like the idea, just like we're saying this needs to have a dedicated stream, it would be lovely for tourism to have a dedicated stream as well. And I would say that in terms of mandating a portion of it to defray future anticipated tax dollars, that's what's called a fund balance. And we maintain that at certain levels, higher than what the state even recommends, I think, at this present point. So I wouldn't see that we need to do that. But thinking about adding in tourism would be useful to me. And does anybody know, finance may know, the round figure that we anticipate coming in from occupancy tax in 2024 is $7 million. So we will be needing to draw from the general fund for some of these initiatives that one initiative could draw more than the $7 million. So I think it is symbolic that we have a funding stream, and since we can dedicate it, we're going to do these things.
Great.
If the executive or a legislator puts up a resolution, if it's over $50,000, we're going to have to approve it. It doesn't matter whether this was earmarked or it comes out of the general fund. Anything we want to do, we can do if we have the money. This is largely symbolic. This is largely symbolic. There will be, if this passes, we put ourselves on a clock. We will create leverage for maybe a housing project that we should maybe not be a part of or is going to happen anyways that we're now going to fund, like Silver Gardens. And but there will be some beautiful press releases over the next month or two, and the people open up the paper and think that this legislature and this executive has a plan. They got a plan. They're doing something about housing, but it hasn't changed anything. We don't have a plan. We've earmarked something that we could do anyways.
But that essentially is the difference. Kathy, you talked about paying for things out of the fund balance. Well, that's at the discretion of whoever wants to put what money in the fund balance. This is earmarked money. When that 1% for housing goes into housing, it can't be used for anything else, which is why they're doing it this way. So it's dedicated only to that. It's dedicated only to UCAP. Fund balance can go anywhere on anybody's discretion because it's a fund balance. And that's why I thought if you put a percentage of this to offset future county taxes, and you're right, that's what a fund balance is for. But a fund balance is to operate the county on every level. If you put this in there as a dedicated fund to offset taxes, that's the only thing they can use it for.
Yeah, I would not favor binding ourselves in the future in that way. And it actually makes me think that we shouldn't add tourism to this, because there might be a year in which we didn't want to take 10% or 20%, 50%, whatever we might say, for that. Saying that we do want always to be investing in housing and public transportation seems more reasonable to me. But I guess I had not anticipated that this would be on a year-by-year basis, and maybe we need to specify that I think we should be looking over a 2 or 3 year time period, so that we don't get under the scenario that has been painted, in which we would have, in this year, we have to spend this money this way, because we might not have the right public transportation or housing projects in any given year. So, what do you call it, annualized over 3 years or averaged over 3 years or something. I don't know, we have to specify that in the resolution, but that would be how I would want it to operate. And so I want to make sure the resolution does that for us.
Chair Criswell?
Yeah, I just want to remind us that we did, in fact, refund the tax stabilization fund last year. And I was just hearing that we have somewhere around $6 million or $7 million in that. So that's specifically set up if there's some sort of issue that we would, in lieu of raising taxes, we could tap into that tax stabilization fund. So we do have money in a kitty.
And maybe a portion of this tax should go into that fund.
Possibly. And then I don't think that there's a spend down requirement for the Housing Action Fund. Is that correct?
That is correct. The legislature, when it may I?
You may.
The legislature, when it established the Housing Action Fund, did it as an assigned fund balance. So the legislature, in any particular year, can change that assignment of that fund balance. The conversation basically said we thought that the continuity of this funding process on an annualized basis will ensure that people start to move and do certain things, recognizing the county can play a role. There's about $3 million in a NOFA that's currently out, and we've had the one webinar with respect to that. We expect by the middle of May, we expect applications back. Those applications will then come to the legislature for funding. The legislature can make a decision as to, A, what to fund, and how much to fund on those applications. We've seen a great deal of interest right now with respect to those applications.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
Is the Housing Action Fund outside of our tax cap limit? We have a limit for our fund balance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And isn't the Housing Action Fund outside of that?
In this case, no. Okay. Right, because the fund balance policy reflects the unrestricted funds,
mm-hmm.
and it keeps us the 15% to 20% of the unrestricted funds.
Right.
The assignment is falls within the unrestricted category.
Because it's assigned, not restricted.
That's correct.
Got it. Okay, right. Thank you.
Legislator Collins?
I'm going to be with Legislator.
No,
Nolan, thank you so much. That is, and I think it was discussed. This is not something that's got to be spent on every year. Now that we know it doesn't have to be spent on every year, we know we can save it when we really need it. And I trust this body to make wise decisions on how to invest things. That's what we're here for. If we didn't trust ourselves, why the hell are we here?
That was a good. Yeah, Chris, well, that's a good question, and I thought that was going to be another positive for, that was going to be a positive for this resolution, that we've got, we've decided that we have too much fund balance, and this was a way to move some of that out, but it's not helping us with that fund balance. So there again, as we're supposed to do something with some of this fund, and there are reserves and things we can do that take it away and lower that fund balance responsibly, and get, you know, the state comptroller and everyone else off our back, but this isn't going to do that. So now that clock on spending kind of does, we are going, well, we got to do something. We can invest, we can do some things that make sense financially for our future, but we got this money sitting here earmarked, let's do something with it. So there is going to be pressure with this. A certain level of pressure as we figure out ways to get rid of our fund balance. And I don't like the idea of that. It's another reason for me to be, to just, if you want to do something, do it. We have the money. And by the way, UCAT has a budget. I mean, if we want to do something, let's just raise UCAT's budget if they have a good idea on something. I don't know about just earmarking something, saying, well, we're going to find something good to do with UCAT.
Yeah. Your points will tell you, but I do think it's important to remind the committee that as part of the actions of this legislature, the legislature took last year, $36 million of fund balance was moved into that restricted category through to capital reserve. Right? We have the decarbonization reserve, and we have the reserve for the EOC. So that alleviates a large amount of the pressure that you're talking about. And that utilizes that mechanism that the state and OSC provide for us.
But because this is dedicated money, it won't be counted in the fund balance because it's restricted.
There's an accounting difference between the restricted and the assigned categories. Restricted lives under state law. The assignment lives with the local governing body, in this case, this place. Because the local governing body is the one dedicating these funds, it lives in the assigned area, essentially. So our fund balance policy talks about unrestricted and what the balances need to be, as opposed to unassigned. So in this case, it lives in the It counts towards the number our policy.
Well, then we change the policy. That's simple.
I just want to note that the language of the resolution is public transportation, and our Ulster County Transportation Council and does many things other than UCAT. And I think that this there would be an important incentive to look for things other than UCAP.
These types of discussions always look at the present, never look at the, and I shouldn't say never, but often don't look into the future. And I just want to say that one of the things that the Transportation Council does is it takes a look at the future transit needs of the county and what that costs are. We run those costs out. Currently, the county supports UCAT to the tune of somewhere between $4 to $7 million a year of county funds. So the idea of having a revenue behind those county funds, particularly in an area where you may not have a bad year as it relates to other types of revenue things, is something you need to think about. When you also move these costs out, and you start to think about the need for electric buses, the need for garage facilities, changes that are likely to come as we go through our routing study, we come up with
almost a figure you don't want to talk about. When we do our long-range transportation plans, we look out at 2045, and we believe between now and 2045 that the amount of federal dollars that you're going to get to support your transportation system versus what you're going to have to spend on your transportation system is in the neighborhood of $65 million. So you have some significant costs that you need to be thinking about in terms of what it's going to cost to run a transit system versus what the likely federal dollars are for that transit system. Even with some of the new builds and some of the other work and a substantial amount of effort with respect to getting additional money. I can tell you the Transportation Council transferred what you folks call the ARPA funds. We had surplus ARPA funds within the region, Tree County region. We transferred $5 million of those ARPA funds into UCAT to help basically deal with the county's cost of running a transit system over the next 2 years, 3 years. So we're always looking for money, but the point being is assigning some money to UCAT is not something that you're gonna find yourself with too much money.
I just want to say one quick thing. Can we just put it in the UCAT's budget if it's a good idea? I mean, that was a lot of good stuff, but at the end of the day, just put it in UCAT's budget.
Then it's not dedicated.
The short answer would be yes. The longer answer is that you would actually have a revenue source for that budget. So you think about appropriations and revenues. The short answer is yes, and then you'd have a revenue source for it.
That's what the budget process is.
Yes.
Put it into the budget. There's your revenue source.
Yeah.
Do you want to
do on
this resolution? Do we want to adopt it? Is there a motion to adopt the resolution as presented?
I'll make the motion to adopt it as presented.
Is there a second? I'll second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Great.
Chair Sperry, yeah. I just wanted to chase a rabbit here for a minute. Monday, April 8th, Dennis Doyle is receiving a very notable recognition from his professional colleagues up in Saratoga, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And I keep the formal name of it's on my cell phone, which is in my car, because I don't want to be distracted when I'm at these meetings with a cell phone sometimes. So I just wanted to recognize it. Dennis, would you mention the name of the organization and what this award is that you're receiving?
Sure. Many years ago, there was a planning director from the town of Dutchess County that was passed away while in service, and the planning directors at a statewide level decided that the excellence that he showed in the planning work they did in Dutchess County was worthy of essentially being recognized at a statewide level, and they created something called the Henry Heisen Butler Award.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a recognition from all of the planning directors statewide for excellence in planning. And I was pretty fortunate that my staff and my board put me in, and I didn't know anything about it. And I'm approaching 50 years working for this county. I'm really honored that the group that got together and decided this award decided that I was worthy of it. And so I wanted to say, if I have some time, Chair.
I'll allow it.
One of the things I wanted to say is that there's one thing that I think that you need to understand about planners is we are the consummate generalists amid a whole host of specialists. So whether we're talking about water quality, economic development, transit, or transportation, or building trails, or doing budget work, or commenting on your capital program, there are a lot of people that are involved in those discussions that know a lot more than we do, but we know a little bit about everything, and we can sort of make the pieces work together. And it's a skill, and it's a mindset that is completely different than how other people think. And I see it, quite frankly, in my staff. I see it, quite frankly, in other planning directors around the region and around the state. And I'm really honored. And if I would leave you with one thought, It's an old Oscar Wilde quote, which basically says, be yourself, because everyone else is taken.
Dennis, thank you
very much.
Don't forget about us when you're...
I think they gave it to me because they wanted me to retire.
I just want to say that the previous years, people have talked about doing this, but they could never figure out a way to get around it and have it done without the planning director knowing. So I compliment his current staff for having figured out how to get this done.
And the Planning Association is having a conference and will be recognizing him. But it is in Saratoga and it is next Monday, which is right during the eclipse, which it doesn't seem like really good planning. But Dennis won't be going up because of the traffic. But we'll celebrate.
Thanks again. Legislator, thank you for listening. Well, thank you very much for mentioning it. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, resolution number 168, adopting proposed local law number 1 of 2024, a local law amending Article 3, hotel and motel room occupancy tax of the Code of the County of Ulster in relation to determination of taxable rent. Discussion or questions?
I'll move it for discussion.
Second.
Okay. Senator Litt.
It was a long road to get to this point. And I know the legislation might not be perfect, but I think we need to move this along because it affects some of the largest economic drivers in this county. There were a couple of things that I just wanted to note. When we were discussing this, we came up with a new definition, for non-passive activity, which is in there. It's a way to differentiate between the different categories. But I had made this suggestion because all the other entries in that matrix talks about other charge, and we really couldn't put a handle on other charge. It could be almost anything, and that's why we came up with the non-passive activity. And I don't understand why it didn't carry down through the rest, being another or non-passive activity. But I don't think it should be amended at this point in time. I think it needs to be passed. The other thing that I noticed, and it was taken out probably for a reason, which is the purpose of my question, why was all notations to short-term rentals removed? I think it has something to do with what the governor is proposing, but I'd like to hear that explanation.
Yeah, that's exactly my understanding of it, Legislator Litz, is that the governor has something in mind for a more statewide legislation around that, and so I think they wanted it pulled from our local home rule conversation.
What was it, their request to have it removed, or because
that's my understanding.
All of our resolutions, laws, whatever. It is always superseded by state statute.
Right.
And we've taken it out because we think something's going to happen down the road that might not happen for another 2 years.
It's in the works.
But if we left it in here and that passes, then it's superseded by state statute. But if we don't put it in there, it's not effective until the state makes a decision. And I don't see why it would hurt to leave it in there, because if the state's going to take action a couple of months from now, well, then it'll be superseded by state statute. But between now and then, it would be in our statute.
So my understanding is, obviously, this has to do with the next resolution, which is number 169.
Mm-hmm.
And the governor will not sign the statewide rule until it's taken out of the municipal language.
See, I don't understand that, because the state statute always takes precedent, much like the federal statute always takes precedent. So I don't know why the state would even care what it says in our statute, because theirs is going to supersede ours.
Hey, let's not take off local. We want that Tech City money.
There you go. There you go.
Cheers, sir.
Yeah.
I think that if the state passes this and all the municipalities have all different variations of short-term rental laws, it will cause chaos. And so there's a little bit of work that will be done by getting some of this cleaned up before the state takes action. But I think it's fine, because we had our short-term rental concepts, I think, incorporated in to the language. So I don't think we lose anything taken out. I did want to say that I drafted, as the chair of the working group that was looking at the occupancy tax portion of this and the schedule of proportionate charges, that I drafted the background, but for some reason, probably my getting it to the clerks at 3 o'clock this afternoon, didn't get circulated yet. And I'll go ahead and ask them to do that.
Everybody has it in their folders. Everybody on the committee has it in their folders.
Oh, the committee has it. Okay. So
but they need time to review it. It just came in.
Yeah. It's just background to summarize the work that we did on this, and if people have questions on it, then we can ask. But I agree with Legislator Litz. I think that this is important legislation. We did the work. We reported on it orally all along the way, and I think this is as good as we're going to get for now, and we should do this, and then we should stay very closely in touch with it, see how it all the different pieces of this are working. And if we feel like short-term rentals need to be addressed before the governor gets to it in some way that's not covered under the current law, then we should do that.
Legislator Collins.
I have a question with the non-massive activity. The way I read it is a swimming pool and a motel counts as a non-passive activity. So does that mean that a motel gets a discount because it has a swimming pool on taxes? That doesn't seem to me to be the intention of that particular thing. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's a non-passive activity according to definition.
So the working group did ask similar questions to that, and it turns out that the way and this relates to Legislator's list question about other charge, which I didn't address. The way that the schedule has been set up and has been working for more than 30 years is that people can count something like a swimming pool as a charge, and that is accepted and has not generated disqualification of the claimed percentages. Because that system has been working for over 30 years and it has generated relatively few controversies, complaints, need for changes in monies received. The working group as a whole thought we would leave those sections that affected most of the venues and operators completely unchanged, so that they would not think there was a change that now they had to, you know, look at and decide how to handle. This new category addresses these very large venues in ways that's never been done before, and we did not want them to count something like a flower garden or a pollinator garden that they plant once and is not an ongoing maintenance requirement as something to get this previously unattainable proportion for their other than room activities. So this language does capture that for the large venues, but leaves the other venues, which is a huge proportion of Ulster County venues and operators, leaves that unchanged, so they don't have to worry about it. But they probably mean the same thing if push came to shove.
Legislator Collins, you're exactly correct. So their rate would be 85%, 15%. Because they have a pool. If it's just a hotel with nothing else, then it's 100%. And if you go through the table, as you supply more amenities, you're charged a percentage of your bill against the room tax, and the rest goes towards the other amenity.
Senator Maloney?
Thank you. I tried not to raise my hand because I really want this to pass, but to the this chart that you have here, it is imperfect. It remains imperfect. I think you did improve it a little with that, but the comptroller's office years ago actually did an audit and went around and found both hotels that were abusing the language and probably should have been cited and charged correctly, and others that were kind of abusing the language but legally. The first thing I'm going to do if and when this passes is ask the comptroller to update that audit. Then we need to sit down, look at how people are getting around, and then build upon the language that you guys did improve a little even more. But we're not really, until we kind of know what people are doing, but this is the way it's always been. This has been imperfect forever. This has been talked about being improved forever. I do think the language cut out a little bit of the manipulation, but there will be more, and I happen to think we need to get it down to just make sure that it's legally just obtainable for these all-inclusives. I don't care if you got a pool, pay the full. I mean, I think that's where most people are at. The pool, should you shouldn't be paying $85.15. You should be paying the full bet. But that'll all come. But nothing's changed except we've gotten a little better with the language they put in. This is the way it's always been done with this county, and this is a problem that has long needed to be dealt with. No one ever did much with that audit that showed how some of the people were manipulating. I think we got to update the audit once we put this through, and then have a special meeting or another couple of meetings to dive in and see what we can do to enforce and change the language a little to make it even more uncorruptible.
I think the words regular, continuous, and substantial are all words that are hard to define. I think having three hard words to define all together makes it really hard to understand what is actually being regulated. Regular means once every 10 years. Continuous means a very different thing. Those things don't translate to me to a law. They translate to an intention. This might be a good intention, but it's not a good law. So I'd like to see, in my personal opinion, the intention of what wants to get done, but in wordings that I want to distinguish and know whether or not I'm doing that or not doing that. But right now, I don't know if I'm a hotel owner, whether I'm doing this regular, continuous, and substantial or not. And I'm going to say I am, because it's going to reduce my tax. So I want clarity on what this law does. Also, I'd like to wait for the state budget to come out so we know what they're going to do with STRs. If it's going to be in this year's state budget, it'll be out in April. It's a month away. Let's make sure that does what we want it to do before we take STRs away.
Sir Criswell.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with Legislator Maloney about the enforcement of this. If you want to call it enforcement, I think it's complicated, and we have to figure out who's going to do that, how that's going to get done. But I agree that has to happen. I also want to just thank Legislator Nolan for chairing this committee and the members of who are on this committee for acting so quickly, and imperfect it may be, but this has been since 1992. We dusted it off, we revived it, and now the conversation is present. So I think that if we have to go back to this again at some future date, we will do that. But now we have a mechanism to do that. And
I would just point out for Legislator Collins that the previous language was other charge. And so one of the first things the working group had to do was figure out what this other charge means, which occurs several times in the previous chart. And what we discovered is that it's sort of like case law. There's a understood use of other charge that the audit, clarified in some ways. Yes, you said you had a charge, but we don't think so, da-da-da-da. I think regular, continuous, and substantial is a big improvement over other charge, and that was our task. It also reflects the words that came to us as we were looking at what the large venues were showing us, is that they were every year, and maybe we just should have said annual instead of regular, but they were every year putting money into these things. It wasn't like a one-time shot. And continuous meant that it was ongoing. And substantial meant that it was basically met the percentages that we made changes. So when we suggested a change in this law to 20-80, 20% room and 80%, that's because those were the figures that two different venues independently showed us with independent methods, and they both had actually more than 80% of their expenses going to these extra amenities. So we were trying to capture that. I think we came close, and I would say let's pass this, and then if we need to pass something next month because the governor does something, let's go for that too.
Legislator Lips.
I'll make a motion for adoption of the resolution.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
The resolution is adopted. Legislator Wells, do you want to record a vote for resolution 195? We're out of the room when we put that away. All right, we have one more resolution, resolution number 169, approving home rule request for Senate Bill number S8065 and Assembly Bill number A8875 in relation to hotel and motel taxes in Ulster County. Discussion or questions?
I will make a motion for adoption.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
The resolution is adopted.
Work paragraph, guys.
Yeah. Thank you for patiently sitting here all evening to our Ulster County Fair folks. Gary Newkirk is here. I'm assuming you want to talk about resolution number 447 from 2020 and lease agreement in committee. Lease agreement for that resolution is in your folders. Please share your thoughts.
Where's Amanda? It's the first we've met with this committee. We've dealt a lot with the public works committee and things like that. And so I didn't quite know how much you folks really know about the history of the fair and what we've been going through. First, if I just look at the name of your committee, looks like big business cards. But we certainly seem to fit most of the economic planning, education, where our mission to educate in agriculture, employment, we certainly do that. Agriculture is certainly the heart of our committee. And really appreciate your time. Legislature Blitz was nice enough to suggest that we come to this committee. I do have a few handouts I don't have to go around, but and this is going to be very brief. I could talk for 2 hours, but right now I probably can't wait to see anything to get out of here. The Ulster County Agricultural Society, we're a 501c3 organization, and we were incorporated in 1869, so we've been around for a while. It's governed by a board of directors, maximum of 21 directors that we can have. In 1967, the fair moved from Forsyth Park in Kingston out to the Ulster County Courthouse. And we actually coexisted for quite a few years out there, probably 20 years almost, with the courthouse, which was kind of a neat thing to do. From 1967 to 2008, there was no formal agreement between the county and the Ag Society. It was all just a handshake. I've been involved with the fair since 83. I actually took over officially as manager in 2004. And at that time, it was Commissioner Harvey Slate, and if you guys remember Harvey Slate, but he would hand me a folder and say, here's the events that I agreed to with the fairgrounds. And it was very complicated. Harvey would charge a fee for the use of the ground, then the Ag Society, we would charge a fee for the use of our equipment and our, work that we did to support these groups. And it was very confusing. So in 2004, I asked if we needed to have something more formal. And we did finally come up and we signed a first agreement was from January 1st of 2008, was the first time we started. And at that time, we got a five-year license agreement. For years, we've argued that 5 years is not enough. We have invested over $1 million in the fairgrounds from the personal ag society funds. And if you looked at that from a business standpoint, we're the dumbest, worst business people around that we invest that much money with only a five-year commitment on property. We've tried to argue, we'll argue forever, on a five-year rolling contract. So at the end of the 5 years, nobody raises the red flag. There's no issues. We just automatically renew for one additional year. So it'll always be 5 years. If something did, somebody raised the flag at the end of that 5 years, or at the end of the year, we still have 4 years to resolve with Copeland straighten out and then continue on. We're never able to get that. We then got, we went from 2012, we then had another five-year agreement in from 2013 to 17, and then in 2018, they did not want to give us a five-year lease, they only wanted to give us 1 year, and the reason was they wanted time to really develop something so we could do a long term. Well, in 2019, they said, well, we didn't quite get it done. We're going to give you one more year so we can work on it again. 2020, they gave us a 1 year again. And finally, in 2021, we managed to get back to 5 years. The bright spot in that particular license agreement was the fact that we would meet in September of every year and discuss what's good, what's bad, what we need to do, and then hopefully get a resolution out of that meeting that would extend the year. Well, it's been 3 years now and we've not even been able to get a meeting. So that's kind of where we are in frustration. The county argues, and I have no reason to believe it's not correct, that they can only enter into a five-year license agreement. So we understand that, but we're just looking to somehow automatically rule that. It's only been, the license agreement has not really been an issue. It's been very good. The first half, the only thing that's really changed is that in the initial agreement, we agreed to pay basically rent on the grounds. It was agreed to pay $15,000 and that any profit that we made off on outside events, anything over our commitment that we need to the county would then get an additional 25% of that profit. So we were averaging out probably paying the county around $17,500, round numbers. The issue was that we could never seem to get any money out of the fairgrounds. And this money went into the general fund and, of course, you know, got dispersed all over. So we finally agreed that we would take the money. Instead of giving the county that money, the Ag Society would keep it with the understanding that we invested it back into the grounds and, you know, do the maintenance. We've done a lot of capital construction out there over the years. You know, there would not be any fairgrounds out there if it wasn't for the Ag Society with all of the construction done over the years. The other thing that's really happening that makes it difficult without a longer license agreement, and Jay can attest to that, the state has finally kind of come to the realization that county fairs are a huge part of the landscape of the state, and they're actually investing money. And in 2016, they started out, they gave a grant of $5 million to be split up amongst the 52 county fairs in the state. And in 2016, it turned out it was $96,153. And each year we have been getting that, with the exception of 2020, kind of put a kibosh on everything. And with that money, we have been able to invest. We built a new, well, the first grant, we actually painted all of the old buildings out there, all the roofs. We built a new maintenance building. We have built a new poultry barn. We built a an extension on that to incorporate into Swine Barn and Show Arena. We built a new Ag Awareness building out there that we just completed a year or so ago. But the issue comes up every time is we don't own the fairgrounds, right? And part of this grant is you have to show that this is going to stay in public domain for years, right? And so I always have to go to the legislature and try to get a letter written that, you know, we're good for multiple years. But it's going to be more and more difficult. The good news is we think this is going to continue. We know that $5 million is back in the budget again this year, whether it's going to stay, you know, we're going to be under the month, whatever the budget. But so basically, we're just frustrated, though, that we just can't seem to get the meeting together and getting the support we need to try to get through this licensing thing. So that's kind of why we're here. We think that, legislature, maybe you could kind of give us your thoughts on stuff. I mean, you certainly thought that this was the place for us to be.
Well, I mean, you talk about being a business. You have to commit to vendors that have at least five other possible locations they can go to during the week of our fair. You have to commit to them a year, well over a year in advance of next year's fair. So when you're at the end of the five-year agreement, that puts you in a pretty precarious position, which is why when we wrote this, and if you look at Section 4 of our Resolution 447 of 2020, the county is mandated to meet on or about September 20th of each year of the term, but no later than September 30th of each year of the term, with the Commissioner of the Public Works or any designee, the Chair of the Ulster County Legislature or designee, to determine any modifications that are necessary. And this was in 2020. This is 2024. But that's 3 years. That hasn't been done. We're not meeting our obligation to the law that we wrote and passed. And I can sense that frustration. You know, we put it in the law, so, hey, we're going to sit down every September, and we don't do it. Why? I have no idea why we're not doing it.
I'm sorry, who is we?
Excuse me?
That the legislature is the
It is the Agriculture Society, the county's Commissioner of Public Works, or any or his designee, or their designee, and the Chair of the Ulster County Legislature, or designee. So those three entities are supposed to enter in a room between September 20th and September 30th to go over this agreement every single year. We, because we're part of the legislature, haven't done that.
So can I just say I will commit to making this meeting happen. I'm the chair of the legislature.
And it's on record. Listen, I will walk up. Make sure we can hear it.
No, I'm a man of my word. You know that. I will make this happen. So I'll work on it tomorrow. We'll try and get something on the books for September. I'll just have to make sure I get the other folks to agree to that. And we can sit down and we can go through this document.
For before September, because it should have been last September, I will say, the new chair of the Public Works Committee, and I'm hearing about this tonight, so I think that there's a longer history here and more to this that doesn't need to be addressed tonight, but I'm very grateful to the chair for picking this up, and we can get it back on track, but there are channels that could have been used to bring this up other than coming here tonight.
Well, we've been trying basically through the county exec office. Maybe we were doing a lot of dealing with them initially, and we've tried multiple.
Current county exec or past county exec? No.
Yes,
past and current, both.
And 2020 to 2023 were years that were difficult. in terms of some of this long-term planning. So we don't have to look back too much. We can start fresh again, I would say. But and I welcome you to come. And if you'd like to be, you know, on the agenda for Public Works, where you have been in the past, and
yeah, I mean, we've always had a good relationship with the Public Works Committee. We worked with Kathy for years. So, and I also offer again. I don't know. A lot of new faces here. Anybody who wants to come out to the fairgrounds and take personal tours?
Never heard of that.
Any questions? may come out. I'm out there all the time and be happy to show you what we have done out there and what we're planning on doing. We're actually in the process by having process out there. You guys, the Public Works Committee approved of putting up a new picnic pavilion. Hoping to start almost immediately. And also, we are investing the 2021-22 grant. We're doing drainage in our horse area. Our horse arena area is horribly wet. Mm-hmm. Last summer it was so bad we had to cancel just about every horse show that we had, with the exception of the fair. We got a break during the fair. That's starting. I apologize. I want to introduce John Fitzpatrick. John is the president of our fair board. John's been with us quite a few years now, and he's superintendent of the cattle farm, so he's very familiar with the agricultural side of our fair. And again, this will be my 41st or 42nd fair. I've lost track.
Let's sit or Hewitt, you had your hand up.
Thank you. I'm really happy to hear the state is more supportive and recognizing how important county fairs are to bring us together. Sometimes when I'm there, I feel like I'm not at a local place and that it's all foreign vendors. Is it possible? And I know there's a little section of local stuff. Is it possible to have more food and drink vendors and other businesses that are local, even ride providers?
Most of them are from Saugerties, New York.
Oh, cool.
Well, we have quite a few local. But, you know, it does make us mad. I don't know if you guys have been to the fair for years. We used to have a big foreign food booth and New Paltz Reformed Church ran it for a while, and they ran out of help. Then they combined and made it the Methodist food booth, and the whole group came together, and they had their food booth there. And they all give it up. We used to have the Lions there. We used to have a lot of those people. And it's like any organization. They have nobody that wants to work. And it's a tough 7 days.
Yeah, it's hard.
And, but, I mean, we do have a lot of the, they look like commercial vendors, but they are local. We have several of them from Kingston area, things like that. It's very hard to get local people. The people in the tent, smaller businesses and things like that.
Yeah, it just seems like an opportunity to work with our economic development department to make some connections.
Then you mentioned the ride companies. That's another very serious problem that the whole industry is facing.
Hmm.
There, I can't remember the exact numbers, but let me quote. It say 10 years ago there was 800 ride companies out in throughout the United States. It's down to about 400 right now. And if you have a ride company right now, you want to be very nice to them and hopefully keep that, because so many of the small fares within New York State cannot get a ride company. Number one, because New York State is so difficult to deal with. And it's just a matter of,
Liability.
It's huge. Yeah, their insurance, I can't imagine. So I know what the insurance is. My ride company pays $1 million a year in insurance.
Wow.
Just insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for 10 months out of the year.
Yeah.
So,
thank you.
Legislator Collins, you have your hand up.
I'm wondering if we can, resolve this, because you have a year plus left on this particular lease. Can we do a resolution short-term instead of waiting for September to extend it for 3 years, whatever it comes to five? I mean, I don't know what we can do legally. But why don't we just address this as quickly as possible until waiting for September?
That's what he's asking for. That's if you have that meeting in September, it'd be a rolling 5-year lease. So in October, as long as everything's good, we would have a resolution to extend it another year and another year. So he's always out 5 years.
I understand that, but I want to jumpstart that process by giving him 3 years now and then go along, because he's down to 1 year left.
Mm-hmm.
So get in 3 years as quickly as we can, and then restart the thing in September to get them the rolling 1 year.
Let them meet at the exact thing, all that.
That's exactly what we need. I want to call her. I'll say, let's call you her.
I've only known you for,
I know,
let's
I know.
See,
1964, we started cutting hay up.
Yeah.
So I've only known you since 1964.
It's only one hand. The problem we have, like, the carnival, like I say, how critical it is. I signed a 3-year contract with the carnival, and it's a rolling 3-year contract. Every year I renew a 3-year. I need at least 3 years to, you know, guarantee that I can commit with the carnival. So, yeah, if we get everything in the position, it could give us a temporary quick fix, and then hopefully we can resolve the whole issue. The only thing, I think, the good news is that I'm assuming we're doing a very good job out there running the fair. As it has been the reading of me, nobody's raised the red flag. And we do get a lot of support from Public Works. You know, I know they're going to redo the whole water facility out there. We're unfortunately one of the two fairs in the state that have wells and public water. So. Public Works has been very great. It's
held us a full affair.
And like I say, there's some certain things in the license agreement that we don't know how to define. The county is supposedly responsible for the infrastructure. Infrastructure is a very loose term. But we work it out. You know, we do some stuff that we probably shouldn't. The county helps us do some things that they probably don't have to. So, Public Works and the worker bees that are out there, they have a real good relationship. It's just the legality that we need some better guarantee before we continue to invest $100,000 in grant money every year.
Legislator Collins, can I ask you a favor? Can you give me just a couple weeks to connect with the executive and her team to talk about this, to talk about, see if there's anything else that we don't know that we should be knowing, and then we can talk about a resolution with that, and we can set a meeting much earlier in the September to talk this through and try to see what we can do to get this rolling. So
that would be fantastic.
Depending on time, we'll try for a resolution for the next meeting, the next monthly meeting of this, if we can get done.
And the earliest we can do it now is May.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So.
That seems like heaven to me. Normally we do it 3 months after the license agreement has expired.
Hopefully those things are gone.
Until March or April.
Well, maybe we'll make it worth sitting for this meeting for 3 months.
I know. And at the next fair, I'll buy you a milkshake. All right. Thank you so much for coming tonight, and I guess our people will call your people.
Again, open invitation. Come out anytime. If you don't really know what our fairgrounds is about, what we've done, I'm very proud. We'd love to show
up. I walk my dogs over there.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, okay. I take them to the park, and if there's big dogs, they don't get along with them, so then we do a little walk-see around. Yeah,
it's the other thing.
The land many times.
The facility out there is getting used so much just for that people to just walk. There's an open couple of them that way with a walker, and it's just an ideal spot to walk.
Yeah.
It's just a beautiful location. Yeah. So.
Thank you. All right. Well, the next thing we need to do is a motion. We need a motion to enter executive session so we can discuss the candidate for the IDA.
Second.
Wonderful. So we're going to move into executive session, which means that we're going to move. Can we have a vote for all those in favor of moving in?
The resolution to include the legislators who are not on the committee? Or?
Thank you. Okay. All those in favor of moving into executive session?
Aye.
Anybody opposed?
Thank you.
live. Welcome back. Welcome back. Legislator Lynn.
There were no decisions made and no votes.
There were no decisions or votes taken during executive session.
Legislator Lynn has just said that there were no votes taken during executive session.
Okay, Polly Barrett.
And now we're ready for.
And now we would like to talk about resolution number 204, appointing and reappointing members to the Ulster County IDA Board of Directors. Any discussion or questions? Okay. Do I have a motion to amend the resolution to insert the names of the appointed members?
I'll make the motion.
I second.
Okay, great. And would somebody please say the names of the seven folks we would like to enter onto the resolution?
Michael J. Hand, Stephen L. Kelly, Rachel Silverman, Katsu Mahal, Trevor Kerwin, Joseph Ferraro, and Randall Levera.
Great. Can I get a motion?
Thank you.
All in favor of the amendment to the resolution?
Aye.
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 Great.
Now on the resolution.
A motion to adopt the resolution as amended.
Motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. The resolution is adopted. Unanimously.
I'll make a motion for adjournment.
Oh, thank goodness.
I'll second that.
All in favor of adjournment?
Aye.
At 10:08 p.m. Tuesday, 2nd.
Hose.
Thank you for the Health Cooperative Extension.
They're never hosed.